Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome aboard. I'm still kind of reeling. I don't know about you, but that was some Jim Dandy good music we had here live in the studio last night. Doesn't happen a whole lot, so when it does, it's really quite exciting, and I want to extend my thanks both to our musician, artist, buddy, T. Page Del Porto at tpage.com, T-P-A-I-G-E.com, as well as master photographer, human rights activist, environmental activist, Paul Corbett Brown, paulcorbettbrown.com, paulcorbittbrown.com. It was really quite an exciting evening, and frankly, I don't think this studio has ever quite rocked the way that Paige had it rocking a couple of times. And I also want to send out a special shout out and thank you to everybody who has done such a magnificent job of getting the horn almost level West Virginia video out there. I had a look back before, a couple of hours back, and at that time, we were up around on the order of 2,500 views since, Friday? And that is pretty astonishing. And I want to thank everybody who's been part of that process. Quite amazing, really. And the amazing on a number of levels, one of which was the simple creation of the video. Tanya Adkins has a beautiful singing voice, and she assembled some magnificent musicians to bring that song to life. And then horn videographer Sue Amsbaugh put it together with a vision that is simply visually stunning. And I just took a peek in to see where we're at. And, yeah, 2,615 views. In other words, we've added about 100 views just in a couple of hours, which is really pretty neat for what this is. So thanks for getting it out there. And it's being dug, and it's being stumbled upon. So help that get viral. Help people see what's going on here, because you know we're very good at getting information out amongst ourselves. It is where we need to get better is in our effort to reach people that we would not ordinarily reach, or who might not necessarily be thinking about the issue. So that's just by way of a little bit of housekeeping this evening. And by way of a thank you. Thank you to folks who have chimed in on the contributions in the last few days to try to get us up at least past the halfway mark of our February goal, and you have indeed done that, and I am ever so grateful for you having done so, because it really does make things a little more doable around here. Because, among other things, when we don't make our monthly goals, that means that we continue to pour what we have of our own resources into this process. And when you make that, make it possible for us not to have to do that, that's kind of like not having to eat your own seed corn, if you know what I mean. So thank you. Thank you very much. I just rolled in the door, had to make a little road trip to go and get a couple of errands taken care of. I was in Beckley on a couple of things, one of which didn't pan out and another one which did. So we, you know, batted 500 on the run. Trying to pull things together here. My lovely wife, Agnes, is trying to get laundry done and stuff washed and folded and tucked away and packed and so forth because, you know, the whole tribe is going to power shift in D.C. at the end of the week. That's Agnes, me, Margie, Ferg, and Doodle. And from time immemorial, moving all of us together, and it used to include, of course, Lorelei. She'll be staying here, though, looking after the next generation of little members of the tribe. It used to be that I said that getting us all out the door and moving, going anywhere, across the yard, across town, across country, to the grocery store, gas station, what have you, that any of that was like unto moving the children of Israel across Sinai. You know, one step forward and two steps back, you know, a real struggle. And none of that has changed, frankly. So Agnes is in field marshal mode, and she's trying to pull things together to make this trip a success so that we don't wind up 253 miles down the road when I suddenly look up and say, "Oh, I forgot," fill in the blank. So that's what's going on around here. Some rather busy days. Rather busy indeed. But that doesn't mean that we're not plugged in and paying attention to what's happening in the world at large. A couple of things that I want to catch up with from last night that caught my attention. Something I mentioned briefly, and that is this article that appeared on MSN yesterday. I think I even mentioned the title of it. The title was, "Hey GM, Can I Retire at 48 too?" Which is a kind of a snide and a snarky approach to the issue of the retirement program that the United Auto Workers had with General Motors. 30 years and you get to retire. You know, 30 years of one's life is enough for any American corporation, isn't it? I'm just asking. How much before retirement? These are good blue collar jobs, or were good blue collar jobs. You get out of high school, you got your high school sheepskin in hand, and the local culture says that that's when you go into the assembly plant. You go onto the assembly line. Or you do, you know, something in the plant there. And there were hundreds of communities like that where that was the culture. And as was reminded of us, I believe it was our buddy David in Tennessee who did this, there was a deal cut once upon a time where back-end retirement money was swapped for front-end pay raises, and management laughed all the way to the bank. I think if I recall David's story, that was that happened right around the late 60s. And, yeah, management laughed all the way to the bank. Except now that they have to honor the obligations which they incurred, they don't like it so much. So consequently, we get articles like, "Hey GM, can I retire at 48 too?" I don't know if Paul Ingracia of the Wall Street Journal wrote that headline or if there's some other little right-wing hack who wrote it for him. But I'd like to have a little sit-down conversation with the both of them, frankly. Because, you know, maybe we ought to be having a discussion in this country about what it means to be a working American. I mean, I know there's that line in 16 Tons where sang, "Oh, my soul," to the company store. But is that really what we want? Because underlying that smarmy, divisive query,
"Hey, GM, can I retire at 48, too?"
is this argument that corporate America has that our job as working class people is to labor under the damn lash until we drop the hell dead and then be grateful for the rest. And frankly, that irks me no end. Retirement should mean something. 30 years should mean something more than a stupid watch. Start in at 18, finish at 30, finish 30 years later at 48 years old. Yeah, what the hell's wrong with retiring there? Maybe at 48, after years of back-breaking labor on the assembly line, maybe then you think, maybe that's when you go and take those violin lessons. Or maybe you just go fishing. But after 30 years, at the age of 48, 49, 50, whatever, if that is the age at which an American gets to first experience that true freedom, having swapped one's youth for broken health, broken bones, torn muscles, aching back, if at 48 or 49 or 50, you finally, a working person finally gets to stand up and say, "I, by God, am finally free. No one is my boss. I say yes, sir, to no one. And I do as I please." Then how dare Paul Ingracia of the Wall Street Journal begrudge that? How dare he? How dare he minimize the value of American labor? See, he doesn't care if somebody quits at 48. He just doesn't want them to have any benefits for doing it, because the Wall Street Journal's a right-wing, filthy little right-wing rag anyway. Good God, what are you going to think of any publication that actually publishes op-ed pieces by the likes of the oxymoron Flush Flemball, for heaven's sakes? You know, Henry Ford II, at one point in time, was discussing trends in automobiles back when it first appeared that foreign car makers were beginning to put a dent in Detroit's bottom line. And the question at the time on the table was whether or not Detroit should wise up and start building smaller cars. You know what Henry Ford's answer was? Now, bear in mind, this isn't some guy on the assembly line. This isn't some guy who hangs passenger side doors for 30 flipping years. Actually, the workers did have some good ideas about what they should be building. They were seldom listened to by management, by the likes of Henry Ford II. Henry Ford II, however, I think it was along about 1971, said, "Small cars, small profits." Because that's where their hearts lay, in the worship of the holy prophet. Not the prophet, but the profit. Small cars, small profits. And then where are we? But that's okay. At least we're aware of what's going on here. There is a dedicated drive afoot, as usual, to put a wedge into the working class and split us along the grain like green wood. people with better retirements from people who don't have such good retirements. Because after all, if you can get the retirees, one, on the one hand, defending their right to a decent retirement against people who don't have such a good retirement and feel like some other workers getting it over on them, then you never, if you're management corporate America, you never have to answer the real question now, do you? Corporate America never has to answer the question of the people who don't feel like they're retiring nearly so well, which is, why do I have to work till I'm dead? Why don't I get any meaning? Where's the value in my life? Where are the golden years? Why do they have to be golden years? Why can't they be silver years or sunlight years or years when I can do stuff before I'm no longer able to do stuff? You know, at 48, you might have a few good hikes left in you. Maybe you do at 68, too, if you take care of yourself, but the odds diminish dramatically as age increases. Maybe this means something to me because I'm approaching that age. I'm a tender 46 now. And you know what? I don't jealously envy, but I admire the guy who gets to knock off, tell the boss to up a rope, and say, you know what? I always wanted to be a scuba diver, and go do it. I always wanted to be an archaeologist, and go do it. I always wanted to learn the violin, and go do it. I admire that person. But there's more than meets the eye in this story. There is an allegation on page 2. Cuss MSN because you can't. I like that link that says show all on one page. This doesn't happen here. Now, I want you to listen very carefully to the second paragraph of page 2. Page 2. Perhaps the best analogy, and one that Washington will understand, is Social Security. Everybody in Congress and the White House has known for years that it's a ticking time bomb thanks to actuarial trends and inadequate funding. But when President George W. Bush tried to reform the system early in his second term, he was handed a crippling defeat. Time out. Okay. Hey, time. Time. Okay. Time. Time out. If the Wall Street Journal publishes a line like everybody has known 4 years, that's like a big red flashing neon light going, lie, 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 lie. Because everybody does not know that Social Security is a ticking time bomb. How many times do we have to explain to these dead from the neck up right wingers that the numbers are good for Social Security? As long as we all monkey with it. Now, the fact of the matter is, Medicare has problems. But Medicare's problems are not problems that are generated by retirees. Medicare's problems are problems that are generated by the for-profit angles of the healthcare system and the demands of the for-profit healthcare system for a larger and larger and larger slice of the financial pie. Everybody in Congress and the White House has known for years it's a ticking time bomb. No, we don't, because it ain't. But by God, if you can just assert that a few more times, maybe it will become a ticking time bomb, and you'll get people standing in line at the DMV saying, I heard Social Security's a ticking time bomb. Heard that the other day, and I sure hope I get my check. So what you've got in this story is, on the one hand, you've got the internecine warfare being fomented by corporate America and the upper classes, trying to get the working people to bust out fighting amongst themselves with the assertion, can I retire at 48 too? And if that doesn't work, they reinforce it on page two with the allegation that everybody in Congress and the White House knows that Social Security is a ticking time bomb. So that just in case the Joe working stiff wasn't sufficiently divided from the guy with the decent retirement on page one, he said, well, I ain't going to get my Social Security because it's a ticking time bomb. When President George W. Bush tried to reform the system early in his second term, he was handed a crippling defeat. He did not try to reform the system, daggummit. Lord, this is one of those Mark Twain moments. I hate weak writing. It gives me the fantods. But that's exactly what they tried to reform the system. Oh, my Aunt Matilda's aching back. He tried to kill the system. Lord God in heaven, where would Social Security be right now, here, February the 24th, 2009? Where would Social Security be if George W. Pinhead, I mean Bush, had gotten his way and had been allowed to rob the Social Security Trust Fund and give it away to the fraudmeisters that operate on Wall Street? Where would Social Security be? Hey, Granny, cancel the cat food. You can't have that either. That's where it'd be. But you know that. But this shouldn't have been titled, hey, GM, can I retire at 48 too? This should have just been titled a dispatch from the intelligence department of corporate America in the class war. Because this isn't even news. This isn't even opinion. This is psychological warfare. This is propaganda. This is dirty, stinking, rotten, and filthy. That is not because I won't sit still. I absolutely will not sit still while some guy that's never worked for a living, namely, to wit, what is this character's name again? Paul Ingracia. It's very close to ingrate, isn't it? I won't sit still while a man who has never worked for a living criticizes somebody who has pumped 30 years and more of their life into the system. I will not sit still and tolerate it. I will call that out for the POS that it is. Why aren't we having a discussion in this country about lowering the retirement, Social Security retirement age, as opposed to raising it? Why aren't we having that discussion? I think I am the only person. Well, I'm sure, you know, if you went in and you searched the Google, you'd find somebody else. But I am the only person, I think, that the Horn family are the only people asking that question. Why do we keep talking about raising the Social Security level, retirement level, retirement threshold, age threshold, whatever? Why are we the only ones who are talking about lowering it? Why 68? Why 65? Why 60? What's wrong with 50? I mean, come on. Let's argue for a minute that let's take somebody who did a 2-year hitch in Vietnam from 18 to 20, came home, took advantage of the GI Bill, and went to college. Got a degree in English, maybe. Okay, we're at 24 now, 25. 30 plus 25 is 55. 55 is in excess of the expectable life, term of life of almost every human that has ever existed on the planet. So naturally, what's the first thing that corporate America, for-profit America thinks of when people start living longer? Work them harder! Work them longer! And I hate that. That really makes me frustrated. That really angers me. 30 years. I mean, come on. Let's think of this as a percentage of something, even though I'm no good at the math on the fly gig. Let's take the first 18 years of life. The first 18 years of life are spent in modern America, supposedly learning and living the carefree, joyous existence of youth. That, of course, we know is a dirty, filthy lie for millions of American young people. But let's assume its validity just for the fun of it. 18 years. Now, 30 years. Roughly more than half. Roughly more than twice. See how I am with the math? Not quite twice. Not quite twice those 18 years. And you're 48. '54 would be two-thirds. You see what I'm saying? 36 years. Well, okay, how about 36 years? Can somebody retire at 56? I really like 48 a hell of a lot better. You know, we retire law enforcement officers before any 60 years old. We retire police officers, state troopers, military. You know, they're mad about the GM retirement system, but oddly enough, in many ways, it mirrors the military's. So where are these righteously indignant conservatives complaining about the people who serve their country for 20 years or 25 and retire at 43, draw a pension, have health care available to them, and then go off and work a second job or double dip or whatever? You know, I saw Wesley Clark in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago, and he was out. He was getting a new paycheck from the ethanol people, of all people, to go out and hustle corn liquor for all intents and purposes. I didn't see any Paul Ingracias there inveighing about how damned unfair it was that Wesley Clark had retired at a fairly young age. Oh, by God, he served his country. He got that coming. Well, what happens when you serve your country by being a part of the capitalist economic engine? Because, see, if it's okay for Wesley Clark or anybody in the military who does a long hitch and retires, then it's okay for a working stiff in the economy, too. Because they're both working toward the same goal, aren't they? I mean, maybe you disagree. This is just me asking questions. But Lord, anytime I see one of these self-appointed betters talking about how long somebody needs to work before they can finally get a little bit of a break. Oh, golly, Moses, it goes through me like a dose of salts. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you know what the phone number is, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's toll free. If you want to jump in on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. We'll check out a little tune. And we will come back to your calls. If, and only if, Bob can make it all work. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn.
In the middle of late last night, I was sitting on a curb. I didn't know what about, but I was feeling quite disturbed. street sweeper came a-whistling by. He was bouncing every step. It seemed strange how good he felt. So I asked him while he swept. He said, it's my job to be cleaning up this mess. And that's enough reason to go for me. It's my job to be better than the rest. And that makes the day for me. I got an uncle who owns a bank. He's a self-made millionaire. He never had anyone to love, never had no one to care. He always seemed kind of sad to me, and I asked him why that was. And he told me it's because in my contract there's this clause that says it's my job to be worried after death. And that's the thing people respect in me. It's my job, but without it I'd be less than what I expect from me. Now I've been lazy most all my life, writing songs and sleeping late. And any manual labor I've done was purely by mistake. Street sweepers can smile, then I've got no right to feel upset. But sometimes I still forget, till the lights go on and the stage is set and the song is home and you feel that sweat. It's my job to be different than the rest, and that's enough a reason to go for me. It's my job to be better than the rest. My job to be cleaning up this mess, and that's another reason to go for me. It's my job to be better than the rest, and that makes the day for me.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A
mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
All righty, about 25 minutes before the hour, and, you know, just my reflections on the nature of work. Good, honorable, sustaining work. But how can you tell what life is when all there is work? If you don't get a chance to do that, you know, stopping and smelling the roses part, you know, take the long walk to the mailbox, how do you know that life's been anything but work? It's just my question. Chime right in. Light them up if you want to. Let's talk tonight. Juanita's with us from Central Florida. Hey, Juanita, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. what you said is absolutely true. I absolutely agree with you on all points.
Well, I mean,
it dawned on, huh?
No, go ahead.
It dawned on me back in the 80s. I believe that's when Reagan was the president.
No, sadly, yes.
That we were going to be, we're being cycled up to become serfs.
That was the plan, I do believe.
I do believe it, too. And, you know, a lot of it, I mean, I could talk a lot about some of the jobs I had, and I think, why am I, you know, for a while, I think, well, why are they picking on me? And then I think, well, there's something wrong with me. For a long time, that's what I thought. Then I thought it was the devil, and then I thought, well, it's them, you know, what they're expecting. Some of the things they're taught, I used to say they were taught different things. Some of them, you know, that had been to school to be managers or superintendents or administrators. And sure enough, I saw a marketing text, and then I taught a lot of that. But anyway, that it's a lot like slavery. It's not. It can't be, it's not as bad. It's not anywhere. But let's say it's servitude.
Yeah. It seems pointless to me it's not pointless. I guess that's unfair, Juanita. It seems cruel to me to insist that someone work their day. For what? For what? At some point, because, you know, the nature of all of this is that you're trading, especially if you're paying into a pension plan or something, well, there used a lot less pension plans now than there used to be. But if you're paying into a 401k or whatever, you're taking less on the front end to be able to enjoy it on the back end. What's wrong with enjoying it while you can?
Right.
Workers are already underpaid, Juanita. Most people don't even get 2 weeks of paid vacation a year when the civilized world, you start at six.
Yeah. And a lot of people, just like me, a lot of times I worked and got my vacation paid separate. I didn't go on vacation, you know, because you need the extra money. You could use the extra money. And it was precious little what you did get. But they do, they've got this mindset that you're supposed to be really like that song said, owe your soul to the company store in different various ways. It is expected. And without any apologies.
No.
But, I think about how, you know, like with this slavery, and the slaves would be singing, and they'd have the beat and all, and the master's people and all of them would say, oh, they're so happy. They're just happy. They love what they're doing.
Oh, look at them sing. Oh, yeah. Just listen at them sing.
And they were making fools out of the white people because of the masters, because they were sending messages to each other. Bad things were. you know, and trying, like the song, follow the drinking board, you know, to escape. And you know, they used to say blacks didn't have the intelligence. Well, I think they were a lot more intelligent because they knew how to pull the wool over. They knew how to survive.
Yeah, because old Morris never recognized that the Big Dipper was the drinking gourd, and it was kind of pointing north and all. And, yeah, I know.
And they had a lot of things, you know, the intonation of what they would do, like their, you know, like their humming and all. They had the going, and they survived.
But you know, there was a time, Juanita, when the English forbade music in songs, you know, subversive singing in Ireland.
Oh, okay.
And that's where all the Turaluras and the Luralees and the La La La's came from. It's all code. It's all code.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that's the way that repressed people, oppressed people, respond.
And you know they know what's going on too.
Sure. There's never been a lock made couldn't be picked.
The people that are in power, they know what they're doing, but the other people, they're protecting us, you know, and just like they stop all these kids for driving, you know.
What's
over the speed limit, and you know, they're putting all these people that smoke pot or in prison. Oh, they're taking care of us. They're, you know, it's law and order.
They're keeping us safe.
And the people don't know what's going on.
Well, what's the difference between that, Juanita, and all the little right-wingers, the 20% dead-enders who still say, well, we will never know how many attacks George Bush kept us safe from. We'll never know what a hero he was. He was a modest, humble man who just saved our bacon and never even told us about it.
Oh, that is so, you know, that is so sad. And I think about the people that think now, what they're going through with Obama. Well, we went through for 8 years, what the whole world went through with the last 8 years. Not to count the others when the Republicans were in charge of the Congress, you know.
Sure.
But, anyway, I wanted to call you about the other day on C-SPAN.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to turn on. You know, I don't see everything. I just see parts and pieces. And you know what?
What?
The governor of West Virginia was on there.
Joe? Mountaintop removing Joe?
The one with the governor's meeting on energy?
Yeah. Was he talking about liquid coal?
Well, what he said that since West Virginia supplied so much of the coal, you know, a percent coal for this country, that he thought that West Virginia should get more of that money for the clean coal situation.
Oh, my God. Now, I'm trying to keep a little bite of dinner down here. You're making it tough.
Yeah. And I thought, oh, yeah, I know about you, man. I heard about you. You didn't even have time to talk to those people that had the wind power going on. You didn't even have time.
No, he wouldn't want that stimulus money if it was going to the Coal River Wind Project. Oh, no. No. No.
Yeah. But I thought, boy, you got your nerve, man.
He's got that in abundance, Juanita. It's it is other things in which he is found wanting. Yeah.
I probably should have listened to the rest of it, but I just got to turn this.
Well, see, that happens to me too. I mean, I know the speech. I've heard it. This is that old joke, you know, about all the folks sitting on the rocking chairs on the front of the old folks home, 12, 32, 24, you know. No, I know the jokes. I know all the punchlines. I know all the liquid coal speeches. I know all the clean coal speeches. I know all the propaganda. I know that they think coal is carbon neutral. And frankly, I'm just not up to hearing it one more time. Because otherwise, I have to bust out all Elvis and go get and have Ferb go get the Elvis gun and shoot the TV box.
Oh, and another thing. to say about that governor.
Yeah, Joe Manchin.
He's on, his little clip is on Buzzflash today about him saying he'd pray for that poor guy that called
him. Governor Mark Sanford of South Carolina. Yeah, he's going to pray.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, what's that? You got no money? You're losing your house? That's all right. I'll pray for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. What is it? I want to bring up three Bible verses from the book of James.
Okay.
If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding you give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? Even so faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone.
Glory. Hallelujah. Testify, sister.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, depart in peace. Go and be well. Mm-hmm. I ain't giving you no clothes nor food. I'm going to pray for you. Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, well, it sounds like old Brother James a couple of thousand years ago knew about Republicans.
Yeah.
Of course he did. I mean, there were Pharisees and Sadducees and scribes and all manner of hypocrites in that day. And, yeah, he did.
Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Praying loudly in the street and having their reward here on earth. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And what's that, where does that come from again? I may have to.
James.
Yeah, James what?
2, 15 through 7.
15 to 17. Well, I knew the whole faith without works is dead part. I'd forgotten the part that comes before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It also
I love that.
Yeah, it also talks in that same book about somebody comes in, you know, like they're shabbily dressed, to treat them the same as if they were in fine array. That's my words.
Yeah.
It's better than that.
Yeah, fine raiment.
Yeah. But you know how that goes. Like, I know when I used to go to the big
church. I can't believe she wore that raggedy thing to church last week.
Yeah.
Did you see? She looked like a street urchin, honest to goodness. I swear I was embarrassed for her. Oh, yeah, I know what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. And anyway, that, that's a pretty good book.
You know, you'd think that feller could afford to get a pair of half soles put on the bottom of them shoes. He's only been wearing them for the last 15 years. My goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Has the nerve to walk down the aisle in the church with them things on? Oh, my.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's another one of those ye generation of vipers things.
Yep. Yep. You got that right. Well, I did want to say about the singer yesterday. I really thought that the one that he sang about the let it rain, that's some good words up there.
He had a bunch of good words all the way through.
Yeah, he did. That kind of a song, you know, has the little catch to it that somebody like me, when I be down and out, some little something like that I don't mean that, but it's like, so neat, what one line, you know, and then let it rain, even though things are not right, just appreciate the rain. And, you know, I don't know, just things like that encourages me. I'm into words and all words, especially lyrics. But that was great.
I had heard Page play before, but I'd never heard him sit down and play a bunch at a lick. And he's got a nice little repertoire going for him. And I tell you what, I am not kidding. He had this room jumping.
I like that other guy that was talking about he works in Rwanda, the photographer.
Yeah, Paul Corbett Brown has literally been all over the globe.
Yeah, that was good. That was a really good interview.
And, you know, one of these days, Paul and I will probably have another conversation because he's got a ton of stories to tell. And frankly, Juanita, I spent the evening thinking about that very simple assertion that Paul made, namely that electricity is not a right.
Uh-huh.
And it takes a while to let that sink in because we are 20th and 21st century people.
Yeah.
And we treat it like it is. And we treat it like it's a right that we have to the not only exclusively but to the detriment of the rest of the planet that doesn't.
Well, see, I don't feel that way. But I know what you're saying.
Well, it goes back to that phrase that I think has been bandied about on this program on more than one occasion, live simply that others may simply live.
That's good. And I'm trying to simplify my life. I have somewhat. I'm still, you know, having to do building repairs, but I know what I know that I don't need a lot of things that a lot of people think they need in a home, and I know I don't need them. And I'm not, you know, not worried about them.
Well, ever since the heat pump went out a few years ago, we've learned to do largely without air conditioning.
Oh, yeah, I had that happen to me, too, and I decided, no, forget it.
We have one little window unit that runs here during the summer back here in the studio just because we can't afford to have all this equipment overheating. It'd be a shame to have a meltdown.
Yeah. I see, yeah.
But for the most part, we get along without it. We continue to simplify our lives here, some by dint of necessity and others by choice.
Well, sometimes necessity will show you that you don't need certain things.
Yeah, exactly. So And like I said, I'm looking toward that day that we can announce with every broadcast of the horn that the network is run entirely on wind and solar, because
yes.
Then we will
yes, sir, Bob.
Then we will really be walking the walk and talking the talk. Right now we're trying to. We buy wind power.
Yeah.
But on that day when that wind turbine takes its first spin. And the sun first shines on those solar panels here.
Mm-hmm.
Then we will know that we have got a very well manicured finger right in Don Blankenship's beady little eye, and it's gonna feel good.
Yep. Well, we're gonna have to do it, or we're gonna have to do without a whole lot more. We're not gonna have what we have now.
I know.
With all the pollution and stuff.
And what Paul Corbett Brown said was also true in that. You don't have to live like a caveman to live off the grid. It can be done, and it can be done conveniently and with modern conveniences in tow.
Yeah.
It just involves being a little bit smart about things.
Have you ever seen anything about Ed Begley?
Oh, gosh, yes. And in fact,
he got his bicycle that he runs He runs different appliances on.
I forget. It's Ed Begley Jr. and his, I forget who his neighbor is, but they go back and forth competing with each other to be greener. And, in fact, it was John Fox who was talking about that on his program one night.
Yeah, he's been doing it for years.
Yeah, before it was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And he showed how that the only time they drive a regular vehicle is when they go long trips. They do.
And see, now that's one of those things that should be part of some level of stimulus at some point in this country. That is enabling homeowners to start using these technologies and putting these technologies to use on a home level scale.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's solar heated radiators for heat, you know, water pipes, all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Passive solar, wind, all of these things are available, but the problem is it's one of those things where technology needs a little push to get going real well.
Yeah, because like I said, we're going to lose what we do have if we don't do something different.
Well, I fear you're right.
I mean, it's true. I mean, just common sense will tell you that. And I finally got some in the
city. Ah, you got it by the bucket full, Juanita, don't you kid.
I earned it the hard way, Bob.
Yeah, the Hard Knocks University?
Yeah, Hard Ed University.
Yeah, that's H. Yeah, you've got a master's degree from HKU. Yeah. There you go.
I just want to ask you one more question. How is Guy James' wife doing?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because I did want to put an update out there. Guy and Bess are having a tough time of it, frankly. I don't want to give away any secrets or make their private lives any more unprivate than they already are. But Bess has been having a bit of a hard time with the follow-up from her injury. And they're kind of in a holding pattern to wait to see and hear from the doctor as to what gets done next. And that's why Guy is still away from the microphone.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say something so he'll know that, you know, we care.
Yes.
About him.
And I know that he's missed, and I hope people are dropping him emails and so forth and letting him know that he and Bess are in their thoughts. Because I know it's driving Guy crazy to be away from the microphone, but it's also absolutely unavoidable. These are, well, I've said it before, when you really live family values, then family has to come first.
Yeah.
First, most, and always.
Well, I'm glad he was able to go to the convention and to the inauguration.
I wish he'd been able to be at the Green Jobs, Good Jobs conference with us because I think he would have gotten a big charge out of that.
Yeah.
But we'll find ways to, one, he will be back hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And two, I'm sure he'll just about the bite the front end of the microphone off being so anxious to get back at it. And I got a feeling he'll have plenty to say.
I would think so.
And, you know, you remind me, I don't know what his schedule's like and stuff, but maybe one of these evenings just get Guy in to do a little update or something. Just to let folks know what's on his mind, because I know that watching these godforsaken repiglicking hypocrites has got to be driving him about half out of his mind.
Yeah.
Especially being as he's in Florida like you are, and y'all got a Republican governor.
Yeah.
Who apparently is getting called names now. Did you catch that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah,
by the other people?
Yeah, Charlie Crist has not come out and done anything stupid like Mark Sanford or Bobby Jindal or Tim Pawlenty or any of those
people. No, he's done spending that money.
Yeah, he's already at work on it. He's got the ink pen out and the little ledger sheet, and he's working on it. Well, George P. Bush, they just call him. No, George P. Bush, they just call him P. He's the son of Jeb Bush, Juanita.
I'm talking about, Junior, yeah.
Yeah, he's
the one that ran over broke it to his girlfriend's house.
Yeah, and did donuts, and did donuts in their yard and stuff. Yeah, that little mm-hmm. vandal, little delinquent.
The one that, Bushy called a hottie.
Well, and the one that old beast Barbara Bush, way back when they were waiting to be, when they, I don't know, Reagan's second term or whatever, they panned over and old beast Barbara Bush pointed at them and said, "And those are the little brown ones."
Yeah.
That George P. Bush. He says that Charlie Crist isn't a real conservative Republican.
Oh. Now, what is he talking about now? He's been hiding out. You know, why is he all of a sudden talking out?
Well,
they didn't go to Iraq or anything.
Juanita, Bushes don't do that. Go to Iraq. Now, come on. You're going to make me think you've been into the toddy early this evening talking talk like that. Bush is going to Iraq. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, they've been hiding out.
Sure they have been, but, you know, he's out of college now, and he's a partner.
He's out of college.
Yeah, but he's a partner in a real estate investing firm, don't you know?
Oh, in Florida?
I don't know. But, yeah, he's a partner. He's still a 20-something, but he's already a partner.
Well, you know, let me just say this. Charlie Crist, he came out, he wanted to give half of that money to the education system down here. We really... They've already had to lay off down here. And he is now in a bind because the rules about something about the education being cut off. Well, when Bush, P's daddy, was in, he cut a lot of that stuff out. So Crist is trying to correct a lot of his mistakes, just like in a smaller way, like Obama.
And can't be quite as forceful about it because After all, you know, look, he did that little bit, and that, and there's, you know, there's attack dog George P. Bush out there saying he's not a good Republican.
Well, I like what Arnold's. If they don't want the money, he'll take it.
And I bet you Arnold would, because California needs the money.
Yeah. But that is so unfair to the people. Like Louisiana and Mississippi. But of course, Hart Barber. Yeah, he's a good Republican.
Sure.
Dip snuff. Sound like a dip snuff to me.
Yeah, or maybe he eats it. I'm not sure. That stuff make it crazy.
You talk about a swine in the worst way.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I ain't
been touching those sauce. I'm just trying to talk to my fellow liberal.
Well, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful evening, all right?
Okay, you too.
You take care now.
Night-night.
Bye. View correspondent in Central Florida, Juanita. It is about a minute past 7. I want to share an email with you just to give you a sense of, because this is reality. We do a lot of reality here. And there are people in this genre, if you will, who do that statistical analysis, economic impact, educated sort of scholarly analysis very well, far better than I ever could. So I kind of stay away from that and leave those stories to those who do them well. There are those who can give you the ins and outs of exactly why and how a pension plan works and managerial decisions that have negatively impacted workers' lives. They're very good at that. There are those who do politics far better than I will ever do politics. But what I love about what we do here is the voice that you lend to this process. I cherish and I revere and I honor the candor that you all bring to this process and the desire to make things better and the desire just to talk amongst yourselves and amongst ourselves like family talks. And so with that in mind, I offer you the following narrative. I received it earlier today. It is from our buddy David in South Carolina, one of the Davids. This is South Carolina David, who is living in the midst of that economic miracle brought forth by Republicans like Lindsey Graham and Mark Sanford. David's a South Carolinian. He's a South Carolinian, South Carolinian. He says, my granddad built this wood frame house back in 1933. It sits near the railroad tracks and has been our family's home for 5 generations. My mom and her identical twin were born in this house in December of 1935. Story has it that my grandmother used to cook up some chicken bog or chicken and dumplings so the hobos could wander around to the back porch and get some hot food and some iced tea. They'd then pitch in and help cut back the ditch banks and help out wherever they could. They even painted a white X on the gum tree trunk closest to the tracks so others would know this was a kind, hospitable place to stop. My grandfather died here on October 31st, 1959. And see, there we go, talking about retirement and so forth. Built the house in 1933, died 1959. That is a scant 26 years to live in something into which you've poured your sweat and your labor. David says, my grandfather died here on October 31st, 1959. I grew up playing out in the yard and helping out. I've mowed the lawn so many times in the sweltering summer sun. My late grandson, Jacob, spent much of his two-short-year life in this house. My grandmother passed away in her bed here in 1984. There are so many powerful memories. We used to churn ice cream on the porch. We'd take turns with the crank and with replacing the ice and rock salt. Many times we'd add fresh peaches to the vanilla. All my children held birthday parties here. There are a pair of 100-year-old live oak trees to supply shade. One's just to the southwest corner of the house and helps cool us in the summer afternoons. There are family photographs on the wall, and they document the history of our family. My mom moved back in with us last year when her twin sister was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Her sister went from intensive care to a nursing home and then back to her home where some other family members did not care for her. Now she's under protective custody and recovering in hospice house. She's doing better. And once all the legal actions complete, we'll care for her here at home. And David says, I made a big mistake back in 1989. Most houses built around here in the 1930s have little or no closet space. When I got out of the U.S. Army in 1988, I moved into this house. The house at the time was free and clear, so I took out a VA mortgage so I could add closet space, enlarge the kitchen, add a bathroom, and add a den. I've paid on this 30-year mortgage for 20 years. I lost my job last January and was able to keep up the mortgage until August. Now the Bank of Oklahoma wants to foreclose. They didn't even notify the VA until 20 days of the 30-day filing. I wrote the VA and told them I'm willing to catch up the payments or work out something. I told them about how the depression I suffered after Jacob's death cost me my job and how I was working through it. I sent the VA our budget with my mom's income included since she's living here. The lady at the VA said she would intervene with the bank on my behalf, and she emailed the bank all the information and told them to contact me. They never contacted me, and now I just got a registered letter from their South Carolina hired gun foreclosure attorney. No mention of my efforts to try and work this out. All it is a court summons for a foreclosure hearing. I can't afford an attorney, and you know that the court will be on the side of the bank no matter what my circumstances. We don't have money to move anywhere else. It would take an 18-wheeler to try and load and move 75 years of stuff out of here. I haven't told my mom because it would probably kill her to think of losing this house and her sister at the same time. To top it off, remember this is, after all, South Carolina David's writing about. To top it off, the unemployment office has stopped my checks while they change the benefit year. I'm already on the extension, so the state benefit year is irrelevant. I'm just looking around now and remembering when the piano was in here and we used to sing together. I wrote all my songs in this house, and I just looked around and saw the old Victrola in the corner. My MS and BA diplomas are on that wall. They're not worth much these days. This has got all of us completely stressed out. It seems like we've been under constant stress ever since Jacob was born. I'm writing because I just have to share this, Bob. I consider y'all good friends and family. I know these times are tough on all of us, so I don't want to sound like I'm whining. I'm just trying to figure a way out of this. Thanks for being a friend. Nah, David, we're not friends. This is family. This is family. Runs well beyond friendship. And I sympathize. I'm about in the same boat. I sympathize with David. And again, this is not about whining. This is about sharing stories of what it is to live, because, you know, we're only a month or so into the Obama presidency. We'll be a while digging our way out of the Bush economic capitalist miracle. It's one of them miracles that the more you stir it, the more it stinks, if you know what I mean. We'll be a while digging out of this. And so, you know, no, we do share among ourselves. And it took a lot of courage and a lot of guts and a lot of heart to sit down and write those words and share them with you. Those are not the words you share with strangers. Those are words meant for the family we have chosen and created for ourselves here on the Horn. Our pal Cindy writes in and says, David needs to take that letter to D.C. and leave it with his senators and congressperson in person. Ask for help and don't leave until they intervene. She says, I just got my friend to do that, and it works. She now has a new loan that she can afford. Everybody listen. Take your problems to your lawmakers. Oh, yeah. Tell David they can't foreclose without proof of ownership. They have to show the deed of trust in the courtroom. No show, no go. That's the law. Laws vary from state to state. And especially in the Deep South, where courthouses were routinely burned, there are ways around that. Just are. We know that here in West Virginia, too, because there are a couple of counties where the courthouses burned down. And lo and behold, the railroad and coal company lawyers showed up shortly thereafter and looked at old hillbillies and said, you don't own that land. There's no record. There's no proof you own that land. So what, you got a copy of the courthouse burned? We'll take that land. And it happened all over Appalachia, the great land grab for the railroads and coal. Oh, yeah, the dirty dealings and the ripoffs run deep, run real deep in Appalachia and the rest of the South. But I know a little bit of what David is feeling. It is not the roof over my head that I am dealing with, but I got the same crappy letter from the crappy lawyer letter Saturday, as a matter of fact. Ferg went out to the mailbox, came in, said, got a letter from some lawyer, Dad. And I opened it up, and that's what it was. It was the drop-dead foreclosure letter in regard to my father's house. And it had really charming language in it, like, despite your sporadic attempts to make payments. And I'm real proud of myself because I did not sit down and write a letter to that lawyer who, as has been explained to me by a number of people, is simply doing his job. You know, just like the prison guards at Auschwitz were only doing their job, just like the people who perpetrated the My Lai massacre were only doing their jobs. People who flew planes into buildings on September 11th, 2001 were only doing their jobs as they understood them to be done. But I didn't sit down and write any of that. I didn't pick up the phone and deliver a blistering jeremiad. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. Instead, I just sat and tried to come to grips in my own mind with what it would mean to know that that place was no longer there. And that the memories with which I personally imbue it are as nothing to a lawyer screaming foreclosure. The years that a World War II veteran spent making payments are as nothing. The home that was made out of a house by a dedicated, very intelligent woman who elected to stay home and raise kids when she could have gone back to work or as nothing. You've heard David's story. This is mine. And they are but one or two stories out of literally thousands, if not millions, around this country right now. And there are far starker, far more terrifying stories than anything I might relate of people losing homes that presently hold their children. This is Bushmerica. This is real. And when a freak like that Santilli goon comes out and calls working Americans who have honored their debts and honored their obligations up to the very brink of destruction and has the nerve to call them losers, I can't think of enough rotten things to happen to that pitiful excuse for a human being. Honest to God, I can't. Just can't. So, that's a couple of stories. If you have any to share, I invite you to do so. We've got a lot more to talk about. Your thoughts are welcome. Your phone calls, your emails, whatever. Whatever you choose. It's entirely up to you. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. Chime right in. We'll be right back.
Mary Alice had a baby, and he looked just like I did. He got married on a Monday, and I've been working ever since. Every week down at the Ford plant. Now they're shutting down. Goddamn Reagan's in the White House. Nobody gives a damn. Double-digit unemployment. TVA be shutting soon. While over there in Huntsville, putting people on the moon. So I took a running number for this man I used to know. And I sell a few narcotics. And I sell a little.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, so we're a little more than an hour into it. It's about 23 minutes past 7 o'clock here on the East Coast. And we're going to go straight to the phones. Alan is joining us from somewhere on the road. We will shortly find out where. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. How about you?
Doing all right.
I'm on the University of North Alabama Highway, your 157.
Ah, yes, glorious Highway 157. Runs between the Shoals and Cullman, Alabama.
That's right.
Have they finally got the whole thing four-laned? You know, they started four-laning that in about 1958.
Yeah, I think it is now. So I think it is four-lane all the way
through. I tell you, it used to be some of the most tortured two-lane road that anybody could ever care to contemplate. Seemed like it took forever to get to I-65.
Uh-huh. It's pretty drive now.
Oh, I bet it is.
Drive, too. Before the sun came down, it's like zebra chrome color, real nice color because there was a cloud cover over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real nice.
So you wandered around in the Shoals for a little bit, and now you're headed back toward Birmingham, or where?
Yeah, they couldn't find me a load, so they said I'll have better luck finding a load in Birmingham area. I guess that's the way it is.
So do you have to eat the fuel on all of that?
Yeah, I have to eat that fuel.
That's tough.
I got a vehicle that gets 24 miles a gallon if I don't drive it too hard, believe it or not.
Well, that's not too bad at all. Not bad at all.
No. Hey, I did get to go to Helen Keller's birthplace, and that was fascinating.
Yeah, I saw the photo you sent along. It looked like you and Miss Lula were enjoying your stop there. Brought back a lot of memories.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's just, if you could just feel the energy of a place, you can that place.
Yeah, and those old trees up there. Oh, man. And some of those things are just ancient, those trees in the lawn.
Yeah. And the water, spigot where she learned her first word,
right,
is still there. Original furniture.
Yeah, it was closed, and you didn't necessarily get to go inside, but you can walk around the grounds, and that's pretty special.
No, I went back the next day. And
oh, I see.
And got to go,
okay.
Got to go inside.
And did you make it over to W.C. Handy's home?
Yeah, but I didn't go in because it was Sunday. I didn't go in then. It was closed, but I didn't go back. But it was pretty handy, pretty nice to see that place.
Yeah, it's just a neat little corner of the world. It really is.
Yeah, he was a fascinating man, and I just drove past a sign saying Jesse Owens, park.
Oh, the Jesse Owens Park. Yeah, because that's his neck of the woods down where you're passing through, and that's, you know, one of those great moments in Alabama history. They had a bust or a statue of him up there, and to honor his memory and the amazing thing that he did in Berlin in 1936. And of course, the upstanding, righteous, God-fearing followers of the Prince of Peace came along and spray painted the N-word all over it frequently. So I think they either had to put it behind a fence or put it in a museum somewhere. And I'm probably confusing two stories, because there was a bust of Booker T. Washington down the road from me here in West Virginia, and they had to do the same thing. And I think they had to build a fence around John Henry's statue down around the Big Bend Tunnel in southeastern West Virginia, again, because of those same upstanding, God-fearing, white power, Christian, yada, yada, who would go and spray paint vile things on statuary.
Oh, man. Ignorance is sickening.
Yeah, it is. It is. But it's also all too typical.
Yeah. I remember back in the 80s, I think it was, or the 90s, I was stuck in Birmingham listening to their talk show because I didn't have the computer back then. And one of the shows I listened to occasionally, but I couldn't hardly stand it, was the Russ and Russ and Define's Define show. It's a talk show, Russ and Define. And they were always bashing the Clintons. And they got their information from the American Spectator magazine.
Oh, mercy.
Yeah, and so that one of the writers in that magazine has since actually just come out and said it was just a bunch of, he just told a bunch of lies. So I always wondered what happened to the Russ and Define, the talk show host.
Yeah, I saw that email you sent. I'd never heard of those people before.
Oh, yeah, they were pretty bad. And, see, they finally decided to say something negative against a governor in Alabama, and then that's what got him fired. So it was a conservative governor.
Oh, Bob Riley, yeah. Bob Riley had to cheat to become governor. He's the one that stole the election out from under Don Siegelman, if you recall correctly.
Yeah. But that's just an example of Alabama's radio, is that you can talk all you want to bad about a Democrat politician, but if you say something about a conservative one, they'll fire you.
Well, that's the way it operates. You know, that's the thing that people have to understand, Alan. Radio is owned largely by right-wing corporations, and they will make determinations as to what can and cannot be said. And slandering or libeling or sleazing or generally befouling anybody that is deemed a liberal, that's all right. That's just fine. That's okay. But, you know, Republican, can't happen. Nope, can't. Because so many of these people are more interested in pushing an ideology than they are in pushing programming for all of their listening audience and actually servicing the listening audience via the public license that they hold.
Yeah, and we're the ones who gave them the right to use the airways. It's a public's airways. They don't treat it right.
No, they don't.
I had other things to say, but I forgot.
Well, these things happen, especially on a highway as pretty as 157. Alan, good talking to you, and I hope you get a load Birmingham.
All right.
All right. You take care. Bye now. That's our buddy Alan calling from the road. Somewhere between, Colbert and Cullman County, Alabama. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey. Yeah, hey, Renee Louise.
Hey, I wasn't sure where you were going. So I guess just picking up where we had left off, I just had to call in because I wish I had more I could do, but I just had to let you and David know that I'm thinking of, you're in my thoughts.
Well, I appreciate that, and by far more to David and others similarly situated. I mean, this is, in my case, we're talking about an empty house. So, yeah, I know.
It's
but
not
yes.
empty.
Well, sure it is. It is. It is. Anything. Anything that it isn't is invested as strictly as a function of my own mind.
Yeah, I know. I had to wear my mom passed, but I understand what you're saying.
Trying to put a little psychic distance between it and me. You know what I mean?
Exactly. But I just wanted you guys to know that it shouldn't be happening. You know.
No, it shouldn't be, but in a different world, it wouldn't be. But by the same token, what matters, and this really is what matters. What matters is A, the roof that's over my family's head, not the roof over an empty space, and two, that this keeps going, that this goes on.
Yeah.
And that is what I'm proud of. That's what we've managed to keep going.
Yeah.
We've seen stories about this, that, and the other thing, and financial problems here and there, and it's troubles in liberal radio land and things like that. Some true, some not true. Bunch of scurrilous gossip out there. You know, mostly generated by the right wingers. And I can't help but look up and say, you know what? We're still going. Unlike Air America, the Horn's never gone bankrupt. Knock wood.
Mm-hmm.
We've never fallen all apart. We've got a little studio here that is very little, but it does amazing things.
Exactly. That's what I was going
to
say.
And, you know, for instance, and not trying to be snarky or anything, but back in the day, in the earliest heyday of Air America, at one point I read somewhere that prior to their bankruptcy, they were going through $80,000 a day, Renee Louise. $80,000 a day.
It's ridiculous, the waste that goes on.
We could, you know, we could run the horn for a year or more on that.
You know, I could a lifetime.
Yeah.
I could live. There's so little that we need to be happy. There really is. And each one of us has a right to have basic needs met. And then if you choose to have more, then you go and you do, and you can build from there. But you should at least have your basic needs. And if you have food and shelter over your head.
Yeah, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Food, shelter, what's the other one?
Clothing?
Yeah, maybe.
Love is what it is to me.
Yeah.
Especially that you love yourself. Because then that's the only way you can give back to others as well. You have to love yourself first, and I mean in a balanced way.
Yeah.
But, and that's just it. It's all the waste that goes on in this world just rips my heart out. And then when I hear something like David's, or what's going on with you, and so many other things, you can just tick them all off that's going on in this world that have no sense to them, have no, it's ridiculous that they're even occurring.
But also, especially after the conversation last night, I tend to put things in perspective. There is a real crisis for people who are trying to keep a roof over their heads.
That's just it.
But the thing is, that isn't confined within the territorial confines of the United States, Renee Louise.
No.
Mexico, to the south of us, is literally boiling right now.
Oh no! When I speak,
the world,
world,
you know,
yeah.
What Albert mentioned last night, that the nightmare that was Rwanda may become the nightmare that is the Congo.
Absolutely.
Look, Darfur is still there. George Clooney came out of a meeting at the White House, I believe it was, with some of President Obama's people who said, you know, that he's going to take this very seriously. And he's going to get busy on Darfur. And I hope to God he does. Because somewhere, if we can succeed somewhere, if we can solve one problem, we can solve two. If we can solve two, we can solve four. If we can solve four, we can solve eight.
And the thing is, we can solve them. The thing is, we create our reality. We perceive, we take what's before us and make it what it is. All right? It's what we do with it, even with what's going on with us right now. And even coming down to the petition that you're putting together, that we're putting together here, it's what we do about it and not just be talking about it. It's that we step up, we look at it, and we say, see what it is, and then we act upon it and do something to make it what we know we wish it to be. And instead of it being a wish, having it manifest, because we can do it. The only one who's puts the limits on ourselves is ourselves. You know, it's there for us to create and do. We are creative beings. I view us all as artists, walking pieces of art. I don't care what it is that your talent, that the gift is, or what you're doing in life. It's all art. Your life alone is an art. And if we just throw all these societal beliefs off to one side, we wouldn't be running ourselves into these walls. And these cyclical walls, it appears, too. Like we keep saying, why don't we learn from this?
Well, look at the story that started the program. Namely, this inquiry by some snotty writer for the Wall Street Journal. Hey, GM, can I retire at 48 too?
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Exactly.
Why not have the Social Security? Because if we make a determination that we want the Social Security retirement age to be 55, we can find a way to do it. This is America. We know how to do things.
And the problem
the
is
people who stand in the way are corporate America.
Exactly.
And our betters.
And yet we have to take responsibility for having allowed them to get into power.
Yeah.
Because our numbers, as we the people, the basic people, our numbers together can heal all this. But we have got to come together and stand together and do what our Constitution says that we are meant to be doing. That we ordain and establish this Constitution of America, what we operate off of. And we have to step up to the plate and make sure we're picking people out of it. Even if we've got to pull them out of there, you're on recalls. But we've got to start really picking up and doing it now. Jump off the hamster wheel of slavery and doing it now. I know. I understand that it's trying to survive in this world. At the same time, you're dealing with the reality.
Oh, you know, you're touching on something sort of generally, Renee Louise, that is that could be a much more concrete reality. You know, I think back to the old Amish barn raisins, and well, frankly, anybody's barn raisins. You know, somebody needs a barn, everybody, and that kind of. That kind of social process exists still in the world today. Our good friend Jeff Biggers, the author of The United States of Appalachia, wrote another book called In the Sierra Madre.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about the time that he spent in Mexico among a people who are called the Rarámuri. And they have social cultural traditions where everybody helps out with everybody else's stuff. And when it's time to build a barn, they all get together and they go and they do two things. They get drunker than Adam's off ox, and they build a barn. Because they see it as social and celebratory. They make this stuff out of corn. Never mind. It's not old ways. They are ways that still exist in the world. You know, we could have, and part of what we do here on the Horn, Renee Louise, is to dream up some reality. You know, dear leader said, it's where hope takes, where dreams take hope or wings take dream or something like that. No, but we can dream up those realities. I'm thinking in turn, and just talking with you has this idea churning through my head because it's been so much a part of my consciousness since Paul Corbett Brown was talking about it last night. What about a green raisin? Not a barn raisin, but a green raisin. You know, there's a lot of people who are going to have to learn some technology.
Yeah.
And what would it take to create crews of people, and the means by which we start greening houses?
Yeah.
And taking them off the grid, taking them off the mountain exploding grid. What if one community in Appalachia went green, and then took their learning and their knowledge and went to the next community and made it possible for them to do wind and solar? And those two spread out, and those four spread out, and those eight, and those 16, and 32, and 64, and 128, and 256, and 512.
That's right. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's exactly, you're right. And you're right, the Horn, that's one of the reasons I've chosen to express my voice here, because just the conversations that you have here, and the other night, I also wanted to say to Scott and to Juanita, to thank them for the way they stepped up on the petition thing as well. Scott took it exactly where I was hoping for. You know, you get it. I mean, great. Each one of us, yes. But the idea was, yeah, then reach out and hit everybody else, at least one other person to come with you. And then Juanita, again, her initiative to call in and make sure that she was doing all that she could do. And I have to say, too, I just want to say to Juanita, I have to also thank you for her. For how genuine she is with all of us, because that is something that is so lacking in our reality today. How just real she is about everything, the good, the bad, whatever you want to label it. She just puts out there who she is and how what somebody might perceive as, ooh, it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful because she's speaking such truth and she's so genuine and authentic. And it's so precious, and she should know that about herself. That's what we need more of. We need to be looking into each other's eyes and really listening more. And about all of it. Not even, you know, it's not even a matter of right or wrong or good or bad. It's just being there with each other and hearing and what you're saying and like seeing whatever comes up in front of us and then putting our creative minds together and working through it together.
Indeed. You've made the chat room run silent again, by the way.
I have to thank all of you for that as well. That is the greatest gift anybody could ever give to me, is that we stop and we listen together. That is, I mean it, and that is exactly, as I told you, by choice, I tend to be very solitary, but when I can have an exchange like this with you, Bob, but then it's out reaching further, all of you are my strength. You guys keep me going. You, Bob, knowing to say that to me, keeps me going on the path that I know I'm supposed to be walking in life, although people would say, why do you, like my mom would always say to me, why do you have to make it so hard on yourself? Right here, you saying that the chat room, that's exactly what keeps me going and keeps my strength, and I can't thank you all enough.
Well, why do you, you know, why do you have to make it so hard? Whoever said it's supposed to be easy?
Well, exactly. You know, right, not right or wrong or good or bad or hard or easy. It's all how we perceive it.
You know, there's that old tale or parable or whatever of the little stone in the shoe.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The old actor who would put a little stone in his shoe because he had, you know, had to play a character with a limp.
Mm-hmm.
So that reminded him to limp. Mm-hmm. Or the other one, you know, you've got a stone in your shoe and it drives you absolutely mad. But then you take your shoe off and you shake out the stone and it feels so good after.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's another thing I have to say, too. It's exactly like when Albert talks about how all that's happening now is an opportunity for us to change things around. And I so agree with him. Because on one hand, it's like you got that fear, which we have to learn just toss to the side. That's the thing where I say we've got to jump off this hamster wheel now. Because the fear is the only thing that will get us. And if we stand together, the fear will fall away. If we go to the edge together and jump off, we'll fly. Life will catch us. We will catch each other. We will fly if we just trust each other and come together and do this. Our fear is only creating matters to be worse. Okay? And it doesn't help, you know, and I understand Obama has to be realistic, but at the same time, you know what? We've got to know what the facts are, but then we've also got to be strong in ourselves and come together and say, no, we can do this. We know we can do this. And this is such an opportunity for us to stop and look at all this crap we have surrounding us that we don't need. Isn't it more important that if there's somebody across this world who is not eating, who doesn't have shelter over their head, or is threatened by genocide or anything else, isn't it more important that that's taken care of instead of the latest computer, the latest TV game, the latest this, the latest that? My gosh, why is that so difficult? You know, I say that on one hand, I understand it. You know, it's dark humanness consuming us, all the stuff to distract us. But people, wake up. We're creating our reality, and our reality is screaming at us to wake up. We can be so much better than what we are.
And see, we build this little activist core here in our conversations, Renee Louise.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know, and we have closed a lot of distance. When you can close the distance between a diagonal line drawn between Central Florida and the mountains of Washington State, or between Southern California and Maine, or Chicago and the Gulf Coast, you've closed some distance.
Oh yeah.
And what happens?
You close distance every night, Bob.
What happens is you may feel like that when the time comes, you may feel like you're alone, but no one is. But you will, but people will be individually empowered to step forward and offer some hope, offer a way forward, offer to take the scales off the eyes, offer to take the blinders off. And in doing that, change individual communities. Now, I don't want to get, you know, I
know exactly where you're going. I know. I understand what you're saying. Completely. It's anybody who's listening to their heart knows exactly what you're saying. And that's the problem. I said it before. We have to stop and quiet the chatter of the world and our minds. We have to stop and listen to the silence. I call it listening to the silence. And then any question you have will ring true in your heart. I don't care what it is. You know. You know that feeling runs right through you. You know when you're making the wrong step and you're making the right one. It's just which one you're going to choose, and it's just which one you're going to face up to, which one you're going to have the courage to do. And we do that individually, and we do it collectively. And we have a big old choice collectively and individually, but collectively now to make. And just imagine the statement that we could make to the world. If we all, as we the people, I'm not even talking about the ones we've put into office who we have to get rid of. I'm just talking about we the people. If we stepped up and wiped away our fear and stepped up to the plate and started taking on the courage to do the job that is our responsibility to do, to run our government. This little microcosmic example of this petition that has started to take weight, which I can't thank people enough on, is just a little small example of it, of our power and of what we can really do together. The conversation yesterday with Paul and tax music, it was beautiful. It was exactly about what we were talking about the other day and what, you know, with this transpiring of standing up for our Appalachian brothers and sisters. It's way past due time. And there are so many issues for us all to be stepping up against. And
you would be amazed if you could see what's going on. And we'll try to document some of it one way or another. You would be amazed if you could see what's going to be going on in D.C. here in a few days. To see 10 or 12 or 15,000, mostly young people, standing up and demanding the right to a viable future.
I wish I could be there. It kills me that I.
Well, I'm gonna bust my hump to make it possible to at least be there in part. Whether or not they're gonna be set up technologically to let me do that is another question. But you know, when it comes to the speakers and stuff, if I can just get a feed off a board, I'll bring it.
Right.
I'll bring it. There's gonna be a huge entertainment Saturday night hosted by The Roots. And I'm going to try to bring that, and we'll try to talk to people who are there and see what they're thinking, see what their motivation is, see what their energy is, see what their excitement is, we'll bring a little bit of the future to life, Renee Louise, in the form of their vision.
Bob, get their email addresses, stick them in your phone.
Now you're asking me to get all technological there, Renee Louise.
I don't even have a cell phone. I can't. You don't.
Oh well, okay then. It's yeah. Okay. See how you are.
But you know what? I see everybody rip them out and they're boom, 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 boom. That's how Obama started organizing everybody. We can do this for ourselves. It's time for the horn to hook into more people. Those people too who are there, who you're talking about, are exactly who would love to know about the horn. So here's your way to keep in contact with them. Do what Obama did.
Well, we're gonna try to do some of that. We absolutely will.
Please do it. I swear, if I had the means, I would be over there doing it for you. I just, you know, I'm trying to get myself in that place. I'm not there yet, but the best part of me is with you, my spirit.
I appreciate that, Renee Louise. I genuinely do, and I know what you mean by it.
I hope so.
You know, you move the dickens out of people. I mean, you know, there was Scott in Sweden saying, you know, wouldn't she make a great drummer on a Roman trireme?
How do you know I play the drums, huh?
And do you? I mean, so.
No, I'm kidding. I had to look up with the Roman trireme. I was like, oh my God.
Stroke.
I was like, oh my gosh, am I beating people?
No, you gotta go watch Ben Hur. Boom, boom,
yeah.
Boom, boom,
yeah,
boom.
I realized right away.
Yeah, you can be slap across the Mediterranean before you know what hit you in one of those.
It's only because of what I see in us. It's only because of the pentest I see and I want it to see us do. And you know what? If we step up to the plate and we have the courage to do this, all this crap that we've trying to fill ourselves with is going to fall away. It's not going to mean anything because the real thing that we're looking for is going to be filling us. And that's going to be more blissful than any material thing that we can think up. And the just the feeling that it would be to be able to bring this reality that we're talking about to life for ourselves, my gosh, and there's no reason we can't if we just come together. You know, and stop judging and these societal concepts that we've developed to judge and say what's right and what's wrong about each other instead of looking at an opportunity to lift each other up and say, okay, maybe that wasn't the smartest thing to do. You know, well, you want to do something different, right? Well, come on, you know, and, you know, or we're so quick to lock somebody up in jail and say that, you know, you did, instead of figuring out the real reason probably happened because somewhere down the line, this society, they were treated the wrong way. They were brought into this world the wrong way. I have a little dog here who is a perfect example to this world. You call it big brain, little brain, you decide which one it is. But I've been dealing with my own health, healing myself. And my neighbor came up to me with this little dog, not even 6 months old. He found on the streets, tapeworm, fleas, scrawny, and he asked me to take him. And I had lost my guy, who I was still healing from. He was three years ago I had lost him. And he's the one who slept on the hospital floors with me while I was taking care of my mom. And so he really didn't know whether to approach me or not, and he was another Jack Russell Terrier. And I knew when he showed up with him, I was like, man, I'm in for the ride. He's going to take me through the last steps of my Sundance. And that's an Oglala, one of the Oglala rituals of the seven rites of the peace pipe. That's a story that everybody needs to know, with something I'm trying to put forth. But anyway, I digress. But in the Sundance, I felt he was carrying me through the last steps for me to be walking even firmly in my life. And sure enough, this dog has had aggression problems, like biting, like you can't. Other people would have given up on him in a second. And if Aldo, I mean, you used to put food down in front of him, he'd be on you, clamping on your hand down, biting in a second. Now this little dog, because of both of us having patience, understanding, love, and respect for each other, he sits down. You started to stuff these Kong toys with his food, and I made him go fetch them, bring it back to me, and he'd have to drop it. As soon as he dropped it, I'd throw him another piece of meat while I picked up the Kong toy. One day, I'm standing at the counter making my dinner, and I'd given him his Kong toy. Comes running in on his own, and for some bizarre reason, I just turned and stuck my hand out, which is something I never would have done if I was thinking. He dropped the Kong right into my hand, sat down, looked into my eyes, which for a dog is a challenge, looked into my eyes and waited for me to get him a piece of meat, give it to him, ate it, sat, took the Kong right out of my hand, went trotting back off into the other room and finished eating his Kong.
It's and wonderful.
If this little brain and my big, or whichever you want to say, if we can get it, what is the problem with us big brains of the world? We're letting all of this material crap consume us. And it's no excuse for it. We wouldn't be confronting what we are confronting right now in our country, let alone across the world, if we just did what this little dog and I have done together. And it's an ongoing thing. It's an everyday thing. Today I went to put his harness on and he was ready to bite. You know, and it's all fear-based. And that's just it. We're all scared of each other, too. What are they going to think of me? What if I, oh my God. Because we don't look into each other's eyes and care enough about the other. And instead of condemning it, say, okay, let's do it. Let's do better. That's that. It's another moment is before us. Let's move forward. Lift each other up. And hopefully, I put my thoughts out there every single moment that that's what we get out of this, what this world is going through. Because if we can turn and make peace between each other individually, first find the peace within ourselves, and then turn to each other and make peace between each other. And hopefully then we can spread it to be a reflection of that peace collectively. And that's
the goal.
That's what I'm working at.
No, well, that, I mean, I think that, I mean, no, that's the human goal for a lot of us.
And that's the world goal. This little dog and I here, if we can do it, he doesn't even speak the same verbal language as me. He's a different species than me, and we get it.
Sure. Sure. I know. Renee Louise, thank you so much.
I've gone on too long.
No, you haven't. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, I mainly called because of hearing Dave's story and your story, and I'm just like dying here because I can't do anything, and I just have to give what I can give.
Yeah, but you know what? You're not within the context of everything you just said. Don't you understand? Sometimes you're not supposed to.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing with me. I know.
David was very pointed in saying, you know, I don't do this. I'm not writing this to whine. I'm writing this to share.
Well, I didn't look at it as whining.
I know. But to generate that urge to, you know, run and go and do, you know, what I loved about David's story was the fact that he did the renovations because the house was built without closets. I am so on top of that concept.
That's what I'm living in too.
Because
I know.
Well, no, there's no closets here either. And I don't know what it was like in South Carolina, but I think I've told the story before. It was passed down to me via my mom and it was my grandmother who designed this place. An amazing woman she was.
Wow.
But she built it without any closets because I'm told that at one time property taxes were assessed based on the number of rooms.
Oh my.
And closets counted as rooms.
Does it? Oh my gosh.
And if it was happening here, I'm imagining it was probably something similar there because when you're talking about a South Carolina or a Virginia or a West Virginia, you know, all of our laws derived from Virginia. Virginia derived her laws from, you know, Britain, as did South Carolina. We're talking about traditions that go back 400, 500, 600 years. And, you know, I don't know. Somebody will have to call from the UK to tell me if taxes have ever been levied on closets over there. I don't know. But it was the same. It's the same story here. And Lord, live without electricity, live without this, live without that. I got to tell you, life without a closet is a damn challenge.
Oh, Bob, I'm in a little tiny studio without closet space. I know. But that's again. But you know what? Not having that closet space also shows you how little you need to keep hanging around.
Well, and in 1936,
I know.
In 1936, a man needed maybe two good pairs of overalls and a Sunday getting buried suit.
I'm telling you, it's amazing.
And it got mended, and a woman had two or three dresses and a Sunday getting buried dress.
Yep.
And it's that's... I hate to say simpler, and I don't want to,
I don't want to cast
what was in fact hard times and damn dire poverty in some sort of bathing golden light. No.
But Bob, who says it was poverty necessarily? Poverty because of the stuff you have around you?
No. Renee Louise, it was poverty. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here it was poverty. I know it was poverty because of what the Republican Party did to my grandfather. He was driven into it, and during the Depression, they got by on. Yeah, he sold cars, and my grandmother taught school. And trust me, the school teachers were not in the context. Yeah, they weren't well paid in this state.
He'd been
this probably predates you, but I've told the story before. He was a real up and comer young man. Motivated, highly intelligent, you know, all that kind of stuff. And had a store that had its post office and a sawmill, timber company, all of that. You know, general store, kept the ledger, sold people stuff on credit. When the Republicans ate the economy alive in the 1920s, just like they did in the 2000s under Bush, bills started coming due that he couldn't pay because his customers couldn't pay him. But he kept extending goods to them on credit because the whole community would have collapsed and died had he not.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, he took it on the chin and let his creditors eat him alive rather than the community.
Yeah.
And it birthed some demons that he dealt with for the rest of his life. But one of the things that he did do for the rest of his life was swear never, ever, ever to cast a vote for another one of the no-good sons of bitches who had done to him what they did to him ever again.
Right.
In an effort to keep them from ever doing that to anyone else.
Exactly.
You know, one of the sweetest stories that I recall my mother telling turns upon one of her earliest memories. And that is the 1928 presidential election. And at that point in time, she would have been 3.5 or so years old. And I'm trying to find the guy's name because it's important.
See, I love hearing all this because this is all way before my time. And it's so
well, she was 3.5 years old, and it was an unheard-of thing because the candidate for president on the the candidate for president on the Democratic ticket was Al Smith of New York. And at 3.5 years old, already on the verge of, not the 28 election, it was the 28 election, with things beginning to head south, my grandfather would carry his little 3.5-year-old daughter, my mother, in his arms, and they'd say, "Margie, who you going to vote for?" And in that little 3-year-old voice, she'd say, "Al Smith and Joe Robinson." And see, the thing was, voting for Al Smith was unheard of in these parts.
Okay.
Because Al Smith was, don't tell anybody, a Catholic. But there's my Baptist grandfather. Yeah, he was going to go, and he was going to mark that little X next to that Catholic's name. Because he'd had about enough Protestantism to last him a lifetime at that point.
Right. All these labels, all these subdivisions we do. I say it a million times, there's only one race.
I know. Nope. I say it too, but just as was the case with more enlightened Democrats gladly going and voting for Barack Obama in the primary here in West Virginia back in May, Al Smith in the general election got stomped. Herbert Hoover beat Al Smith 58% to 40%. 58% of America wanted everything that Herbert Hoover was about to do to them. 40% didn't.
I guess there's a little bit of a curve.
Yeah, a little bit. The socialist Norman Thomas got 0.7% of the vote. The communist William Z. Foster got 0.1% of the vote. But at the end of the day, 58, and it's the same thing. It was 1928 or 2004. You pick. You know what I mean? I'm not yelling at you.
Oh, no, I know you're not. I know exactly.
But you know, it's okay, granted, the hats were different.
Exactly.
I guess there were high button, you know, I guess there were spats and high button shoes, and but so what?
What?
Because in 2004, Knowing that they had been ripped off before in 2004, American people went to the polls.
I know how many of them? How many of them? It's ridiculous how many of them voted for McCain.
And went in 2004 allegedly reelected Bush in 2008, knowing what they already knew, went and said, "Hey, John, do it to us some more, buddy."
Exactly. This is just it. This is
And so tonight we stand. So tonight we stand sort of perched on a little brink, Renee Louise, because Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, got it. It's still, even though he's not doing everything I want done or nearly fast enough.
I know.
That was one of those James Kirk moments. Sorry. But even under those circumstances, it still feels mighty good to say President Barack Obama, as opposed to having to say President Grumpy Old White Man.
Oh, gosh.
You know, I mean, consider where, you know, people who aren't happy enough with Obama are happy or disgusted with, and I am disgusted with some of the things he's already done.
Oh, I am not. I've said to you before, too, I am not on the Obama bandwagon, but no, I know. I'm more disappointed in we the people.
There you go.
It's not, you know, it's not.
You know what? You want an unqualified end to torture in this country?
We didn't have to even put Obama in there. We had other choices.
Yeah, but you want an unqualified end to torture in this country? Put 3 million people around the United States Capitol building. There'll be an end to torture, unequivocally.
Yeah.
You want the prosecution of George W. Bush? Quit waiting for Barack Obama to do it and get 3 million people around the Capitol of the United States, and Nancy Pelosi will do it. You want, yep. you want universal single
about it and do it.
You want universal single payer health care? Put 3, 4, 5 million people around the Capitol. You will have universal single payer health care.
Exactly, but we can make it a chain throughout this nation if we all just stopped and stood together. Do you know, beautiful. Beautiful example it would be to the world, if to the world, and a statement to the world to also say to them, look, we know what we've done, and to show them that we're looking to we're not having to have Obama as the symbol of, look, we're trying to change, to show them how we're really willing to change, that we know we need to change, that we're ready to step up to the plate. If we the people stood up together and all walked out in the street and just sat down together at the same time, shoulder to shoulder.
Pretty stunning, ain't it?
Wouldn't it be? And what effort would it take?
We may be getting close to finding out.
And I don't want to hear you.
We may be getting close to finding out, Renee Louise. We may find out in fits and starts. We may find out in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Because that ignorant little the soulless thing there, Bobby Jindal.
Yeah.
If Louisianans, who are getting damn close to having nothing left to lose, decide to stand up on their hind legs and head for Baton Rouge, you know,
then we
Bobby Jindal,
step up and walk out the door with them.
There you go. There you go. Hey, Renee Louise, I am going to roll along, oh dear, because I got a couple of blinking lights I want to make sure I hit.
I didn't mean to.
No, don't you apologize. I extended this conversation. Not your fault.
Okay.
No
Can
fault
I just
to be.
Another thing?
Yeah, sure.
Really quick, for what it's worth to David out there in South Carolina, I don't know if it means anything to you, but it meant something to me. Although I came into this world much later than when your father left it, I was born on October 30th. And to me, him having 31st, it's special to me. And I just felt an even further connection with him, and I wanted him to know that.
Beautiful. Thank you, Renee Louise.
Okay.
Take care.
Take care, Bob.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
And we roll along, I hope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks. Before I forget to ask, who... What music were you playing, that song, Your Last Break?
Oh, that was the Drive-By Truckers, Putting People on the Moon. That's from an album called The Dirty South.
Wow. Really like that.
Yeah, that's but kind of topical, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Very few songs mention something like cancer, and I appreciated that you mentioned that, and, you know, people not being able to get the care for it, but, you know, wondering why people are getting it every year.
Well, Preston, you may just have to take a Sunday afternoon someday and sit down with a little, a nice little, soupçon of Drive-By Truckers, because they do that. They write like that all the time. They don't, Patterson Hood and Mike Cooley do not shy away, from tough topics. And it can be loud, and they aim to be loud and noisy. I've still got a T-shirt that was given to me Father's Day last year that said, Hood Cooley, a louder America. I'm there. But the lyrics are breathtaking. Just magic.
Great. My mom died of uterine cancer actually about 15 years ago, and she was in her late 50s. And, you know, we started to wonder, you know, what was in the water we were drinking, and why is everybody's lawn so perfect, you know, free of weeds and all that stuff. And what are we doing to achieve this aesthetic? And, yeah. So speaking of, before she died, she kind of started investing in time and money in kind of conservation groups and stuff like that. But did you happen to notice one of the Oscar nominees for Best Documentary was a film called The Garden?
Yes, I did.
I like that. I like that they got some publicity. I wish they had won, but I'm so glad they got the publicity. And people are learning about this movement, you know, to get back to the soil and treat the earth differently, and how that can help ourselves.
Well, like I said, one of the things that I'm hoping to sneak into at this Power Shift conference is the little seminar, workshop, what have you, called Gardening for Climate Change. I want to hear every word they have to say on that, and I want to bring it back here and put it in practice.
Great. I planted a plum tree a couple of years ago. I'm not sure when it will start fruiting, but
You know, one of the keys to that is finding out whether or not you planted one that needs a pollinating pair, or if it's a self pollinator. Yeah. Oh my God! It's the garden hotline. What, Preston? You never cease to look at the places you take me. But yeah, some fruit trees have to have another one of a different species to provide the pollen.
Yeah, and apparently, some of our cities planted a lot more males among those trees that do have different sexes. So some cities planted a lot of males because the females would be the flowering ones, and they drop the seeds, and, you know, some people saw that as messy.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so we've got kind of an overabundance of males and their pollen, and I don't know. But
next thing you know, they'll attack another park. No, I'm sorry, that's what happens when you get too many men, but never mind. I was being a smart aleck.
Saw an article today on Common Dreams about how there's a decent chance that part of the White House lawn is going to be turned into a vegetable garden.
Oh, I hope so. that'll drive the right wing absolutely batty.
Yep.
Especially if there's any footage of Barack Obama out there with his gardening duds on, you know, hoeing away at the corn. I just hope he plants heirloom seed. That's all I want.
Yeah, I'm sure if it happens, it's going to be good stuff, organic and all that. He's talked about it. He's conscious of it. Michelle has spoken about it as well. And it was like some advisor to, you know, not one of our favorite people, Vilsack, but they asked him, and he thought it was going to happen. And there's been a lot of action, a lot of writing and talking about it. People like Michael Pollan, who wrote that book, you know?
Yes.
He started this push to get a White House farmer, you know, in addition to like the White House chef, let there be a White House farmer, and people and names like Alice Waters and all these organic farmers around the country, their names were brought up. And I don't know if there's going to be an official post of White House farmer, but, you know, there might be a little White House garden. And you're right, the right wing will hate it because they don't want people doing things that are kind of, you know.
The right wing will hate it, and after they get done hating it, they will try to, you know, the old saying, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. They'll try to make the best of it by making sure that the very best in poison is brought to the White House garden from, you know, Ortho and Bayer Crop Sciences, and, you know, to make sure there's none of those pesky honeybees in your garden.
That's where the battle will be. They'll try to do that for sure. But I don't think they're going to succeed. But you know, they'll hate it on so many levels. And they'll hate it, especially if it's organic and you know, and if, you know, just the model it would provide if, you know, people kind of...
God, you can hear Flush Flimball now. My friends, the communist Barack Obama is raising an organic garden. Full-scale proletariat of the masses cannot be far away.
Right.
Of course, Alan Keyes is out there calling him a communist already. So, I mean, you know, that's supposed to be some little pathetic attempt at humor on my part, Preston. But no, he's really, really doing it. Alan Keyes called Barack Obama a communist.
We've got that going on here in Denver. You know, some of our radio hosts on these, you know, they're called local stations, but they've got 50,000 watt signal.
Right.
So they reach 38 states. And, yeah, they likened him and his, you know, supporters as kind of a Nazi movement. And,
well, I just wish they'd pick an operating dictatorial philosophy and stick with it for my part. I mean,
yeah. But, you know, if they do go after these things, like, you know, a garden on the White House, you know, there'll be a part of their audience that will get all agitated over that and see it as another sign of, you know, socialism on the march.
And I've just got one question. I've just got one question for him, hypothetically, Preston. Why can't the President of the United States have a decent tomato? Why can't the President of the United States have a good cucumber? Because you know what? Anything you buy from a store that's been trucked in isn't one. You know, a good tomato comes from when it's you know, time for the tomatoes to come in and so forth. A good tomato comes from less than 10 miles from wherever it is you live, or it's not a good tomato. More than 10 or 15, 20 miles, and it's been picked green somewhere.
Right.
So I say, you know, for all that we put on him, I say bully. I say let the President of the United States have all the good, fresh, vine-ripe tomatoes and cucumbers straight out of the garden, sliced up thin in a little bowl with thin sliced onions, a little bit of white vinegar, and a little bit of ice water, a little bit of sugar in there. I say let him have all of that he wants. Because after all, this is America, and we're free.
Yeah,
and I'm playing a little bit, but it is, it's a freedom message. You know, sustainability is a freedom message.
Yep.
A garden is a freedom message. I've said before that, you know, if you put up your tomatoes and bless your heart, our pal Nanette in the chat room, I don't think she's in there tonight, but yeah, we've talked together, and when you get down to about this time of year, and trust me, I can tell you the truth of this because I don't have any. But when you get down to about this time of year and you reach into your canned goods and you pull out that last jar of last summer's home canned tomatoes, it can save a life, Preston. It can make the last few days of miserable February pass into March without wanting to do some sort of weird ritual disembowelment ritual.
That's good. This is a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I know of whence I speak.
Yeah. And you know, we have a lot of allies from the other side on this issue, you know, so that if Limbaugh goes after something like this, there will be conservatives and right-wingers in his audience who grow their own saying, that's crazy. Oh, that's a good thing Obama's doing that, and they'll think Russia's kind of crazy.
Hey, I gotta ask a question of you, Preston, because you always are putting me onto such great publications. I have one in my hand here that I have to ask you about to see if you've heard of it. Paul Corbett Brown gave me a copy last night. It is stunning. It's a beautiful magazine called Need.
I've heard of it. I picked it up once. I liked it.
It's called the humanitarian magazine Need, and it is stunning photography, great writing. And, you know, just stuff that you get the idea they're not going to find time for in, oh, I don't know, National Geographic or Time or U.S. News and World Report that's out there publishing polls of which female politician you think would run the best daycare center. Just not going to make it into that. And I've been going through it since Paul gave it to me. And it's one of those things that changes your perspective. It takes you outside of this relatively tiny little place that we call America.
Yeah. I remember liking it. I'm not real familiar with that one, but I think I picked up an issue several months back, and it may have been that magazine that featured a relative of the Bush family who was selling these kind of canvas tote bags, and the money was going to something like UNICEF or something like that.
Well, I love the motto on the bottom of this one, Preston. It says, "We are not out to save the world, but to tell the stories of those who are."
Oh, great. I like that, too. I just got two magazines just today that are kind of operate in the same spirit. You probably know the Utney Reader.
Oh, yes. Yes, yeah.
I was just flicking through that. And then there's another one called Ode, which is like an international version of Utney Reader. In fact, from Utney, one of their lead editors is at Ode Magazine now, doing really good work. And it was either in Utney or Ode that I was reading about mycodiesel. We were talking about mushrooms a couple weeks back, and then I came upon this article on how the scientist thinks that we can drive our cars on diesel made out of mushrooms. So we'll see.
That would be a nice thing to see.
Yeah.
And that's the purpose of all of these publications, the work that the people do inside the publications. That is, and that is, you know, it's what I was talking about with Rene Louise, to provide the concrete example of the validity of the vision.
Yeah. That's it. A different sort of vision, and who's going to define what's a valid one or not. You know, if we can go to the moon,
yeah,
we could probably do mycodiesel.
And why? Yeah, precisely. So, no, I just, if you get a chance, pick up, because, you know, you're out there in civilization. And if you get a chance, pick up a copy and have the photography is stunning. And like I said, the text is equally compelling. And it's obvious that, I love these smaller publications that you talk about because there's so much really, really solid work that goes into them. The paper quality is good. The photography is magnificent. But the production values are stunning and far exceed anything you'll ever find in a so-called mainstream publication.
Yeah. I mean, if these magazines were available at the supermarket checkout lines, you know, it would be a different world. And we're always told that, hey, the people want people and the National Enquirer and the UFO stories. You know, that's what the elite want us to want, and that's what gets kind of rammed down our throats. Yet another story of Jennifer Aniston's personal life. It's amazing. Week after week, we're being manipulated. I think they partially create that market, but I think it's, I think if something else had a chance, you know, that they'd sell.
Well, it would be interesting to do a detailed examination of that publicity loop.
Yeah.
Because all of it was born and created in the old contract days of Hollywood. You know, when the actors literally didn't own the rights to their own labor. They had a contract with the studio, and if they screwed up, the studio would put them in bad movies, and if they behaved themselves, the studio would put them in hand them good scripts. And then the PR departments ginned up all of this stuff that, for instance, Depression-era America just gobbled up because it was a diversion from the misery and drudgery of their own lives.
Yeah, yeah. Did you sense that at all from this Slumdog Millionaire phenomenon?
I haven't seen the film, but I've read enough surrounding it to really give me an ugly case of the creeps about that film, mm-hmm. frankly.
Yeah, I mean, there are aspects of its success that I've really enjoyed. I watched part of the Oscars the other night, and I loved seeing all these Indian people up on stage, and the guy who did one of the songs, he performed with usher, and there's this very well choreographed dance routine, and you know, and I think it kind of helps cultivate multiculturalism.
But when you turn around and read a story about the fact that the two children at the center of it were plucked out of poverty, used, paid a pittance, and dropped back into poverty with none of the promises fulfilled, that, well, I don't care where it happens on the globe, child exploitation is child exploitation.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be on the lookout for articles and stuff, and I certainly need to check it out, too. I don't and see what I think about the content of the film itself. But anyway, and speaking of PR manipulation, creations of stories and narratives, this Centelli person.
Yes. That's a man in need of a runaway bus. I mean, I'm sorry, it's very insensitive of me, but it just is.
You know, I don't think he just happened, you know. I think a lot of thought went into...
Oh, heavens, yes!
You know? And, yeah, he's all over the place. And, yeah, his remark about the losers, the so-called losers, and how, you know, that actually Media Matters has done a good deconstruction of some of his arguments and also how the media is playing along. So many figures in the media are like, this Centelli has really hit a nerve with America. He's on the pulse of America. So they drop the thought that he's a populist figure when, in fact, he's not. You know, Media Matters have these other polls about what people are really thinking, which are very much counter to what these media pundits are saying what we're thinking. And, yeah, there's it's a huge manipulation going on. There are a couple people in my life who I love dearly, but who I disagree with on every political issue imaginable. But I find that they're great kind of intel for me, because when they come to me, they're always coming to me with the new Fox narrative that I'm supposed to be up on, or they want me to be up on. And the Centelli figure was the latest. I was like, okay, I'll have to check this out. It's like, thanks for that. I try to slip a copy of Utney Reader in their hands every now and again, and I actually subscribed someone to it years ago.
Oh, that's that's like publication terrorism, isn't it?
It is. And
My God, sending a subscription to Mother Jones to some sort of bow tie wearing conservative.
Right, right. And he didn't quite embrace it the way I was hoping he would. And
no, no.
He made a remark about how glad he was that it came in a plain brown wrapper.
Yeah, because all the other magazines he gets in the plain brown wrapper are a lot more enjoyable, I'm sure. Oh, God.
You know, he didn't want his neighbors or his postal person to start talking about this subversive thing he's getting. But anyway, what else? I so much enjoyed what Rene Louise was saying, so many things about our numbers. And through our numbers, I like how she put it, we could heal this, you know. So the Bastille and take off heads and stuff like that, but we can heal this.
Right. And that's what led me to start thinking, Preston, about what happens when the time comes that people with the vision are called upon to lead. Because there's a lot of America, frankly, who has the same mindset as George W. Bush. What? There's a problem? Well, we need to go to Walmart. We can shop our way out of this depression. It's a no-brainer because there's clearly no thought involved with it. But they think that way. Well, you know, if we can just get the economy back to where we can all buy flat-screen TVs again. No. No, it doesn't work that way. It's the consumerist. It's the consumptive. You know, my God, let us not fail to recall, Preston, that the old time word for tuberculosis was consumption. It's the same thing. what you think you're consuming ultimately winds up consuming you.
Yeah.
And while I'm not sitting here, doing the Gandhi thing and spinning my own cloth, I'm as much of a creature of wants and desires, and you know, we've all got our particular hang-ups, and I have mine. I love kitchen gadgets. I love pots and pans. But I love pots and pans that I think I'll be able to leave to my great-grandchildren because of the way they're made. But no, we've all got our creature so-called consumer hang-ups. I'd like to have a TV hanging in this studio so that I can have, you know, a variety of news going on the satellite dish because we're kind of plugged in that way, and it's important that we see and we know.
Yep. But it's a question of bringing some mindfulness.
There. Yes, that.
Consumerism or defiance. Or...
Well, right. For instance, I want a TV in the studio for reasons related to what we do here. That does not mean that I have to have a 65-inch rear projection Mitsubishi giant blinding jumbotron in here. You know, a little 24-inch affair will do fine.
Right.
You know, doesn't use a lot of watts, and it'll suffice just perfectly.
Right.
And you know those people exist. I mean, I'm sure you know people who are probably those people who exist. I know these people, who have nothing less than a 42-inch flat screen in every bedroom, in the living room, and a little one hanging in the kitchen for when they're in there. I mean, yeah. I know these people. Or one of the things that drives me batty, walking through, you want to talk about a carbon footprint of a fender, go into any big retail outfit, whether it's a place that I can kind of tolerate, like Kroger's, because it's at least a union shop, or whether it's, you know, Wally World or something, or you know, Costco that's union friendly, but there's still great big eco-energy sucks. And you walk down the main drag of the flashy new grocery store, and there's a dadgum LCD flat screen TV advertising stuff to you in the grocery store every 30 feet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or you walk into a local pizza joint like we've got here. Doesn't even make good pizza, trust me. And there's five in a tiny space, Preston. Five in Fayetteville, West Virginia, five 42-inch LCD televisions hanging from the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
All going at the same time in a place that's got, you know, great big honking energy-consuming ovens going, too.
Yep.
You know, what kind of a dead-from-the-neck-up species have we become?
Yeah.
When we can't even, you know, because the whole idea of going to a restaurant, last I checked, is to enjoy the food that the restaurant offers because it's not like the food you have at home, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And at home, we sit and we watch TV while we have dinner. So in the restaurant, is this the new 21st century definition of home cooking?
Yeah. Well, I live next door to a bar restaurant. And, over the past few years, you know, they've kept adding bigger and louder TVs, and it's usually sports, you know, kind of blasting at you. And, it's kind of a noise pollution, and you really have to kind of speak loudly yourself, and I don't know, it's kind of a...
Well, and I know this is going to come off like me saying that, you know, I buy Playboy because I read the articles, but one of my favorite places to go and get some good, you know, good buffalo wings is Hooters. But it's this sensory overload when you go in there, and I'm not talking about the waitresses.
Mm-hmm.
It's 19 televisions doing 19 different sets of programming. It's like walking into one of those video slot machine parlors in northern West Virginia up in Wheeling where it's the sound of 50,000 yeah. slot machines all merged together in this sort of go, 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 do, 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 do noise.
Yep. I know just what you mean. We've got that going on here in Colorado, Cripple Creek and Black Hawk, a couple of mountain towns that have gambling casinos and all the racket. In fact, they advertise constantly on the talk radio shows, and they bring in all that audio noise and they study that stuff. They've got all kinds
of
behavioral scientists, you know, creating certain noises to get how do people's heads turns or eyes light up. They concentrate on the carpet they lay down, the configurations and stuff. It's just like this hyperkinetic stuff going on. You're right. But and what's coming through those TVs? I know there's people with like 5 TVs and they're all on at once. And you know what's coming through them, and especially if you have children, do you want your kids walking upon all this stuff or not? You know, let them watch it, but watch it with them and think. You know.
Well, yeah, it's like Hooters. I'm a lot less worried about the scantily clad waitresses than I am about the consumerist pornography being pumped out over all the televisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and. Renee was talking about, you know, having our basic need, you know, of food and shelter, you know, healthcare, also media and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that the U.S. is a signatory to. There's a part in there about the right to media and popular media and having, you know, people's opinions expressed and to express them. As being a right, and they are airwaves have in so many ways been colonized and used as a weapon against us instead of a tool for us. 80,000, that's, you know, what you could do for $80,000. What a shame that kind of money is, you know.
Yeah.
Can't get passed around a little better. And actually, I thought back to that Slumdog Millionaire thing going on, the phenomenon. One of the Indian kids, as cute as he or she was, apparently one of them kept saying that they wanted to meet Miley Cyrus.
Oh.
And, yeah.
Well, I guess the Obama girls were on that program or are going to be on the show.
Okay. That's a little, I don't know, that kind of bothers me, too, because, again, Miley Cyrus is this creation of the, you know, media matrix. And, you know, to have these adorable, you know, oh, they said they'd be Miley. I don't know. I wonder if they said, I want a subscription to Noon Magazine or, you know, I want to meet Alice Walker. I wonder if it would get the same publicity or something. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
They're feeding the machine. That's great PR for Miley Cyrus, and everyone's got to love Miley Cyrus. And but some, her lyrics and the shows that she's on, the Hannah Montana thing, that is so manipulative. It's all these kids, and they're all like these upper class kids, and they're living these, you know, totally consumerist lifestyles, and they're just shopping and walking around with shopping bags and comparing, they're making fun of other children.
Yeah.
How they dress.
You know, one of the, you talk about access to popular media and so forth. I don't go there nearly often enough, and granted they hustle a lot of stuff, but I don't go to the Onion nearly as often as I should, Preston, because that place just makes me happier. The humor is so, Sue in the chat room, ELO, passed around this link the other day to a story from The Onion. You know, they're literally the funniest people on the web. The story was Sony rolls out brand new PO piece of that absolutely will not do what it's effing supposed to do. And the whole thing, and I was just, because I'm a techno geek, I was in stitches by the time I was done. But you mentioning Miley Cyrus brought something up, and I just want to share a little bit of Onion audio with you.
Great.
Because this will just make you feel better after what you were describing about the kids from Slumdog Millionaire.
We'll run the first in a 6-part series examining America's overuse of Hannah Montana star Miley Cyrus. Most experts now agree that at current usage levels, Miley Cyrus will be drained dry of entertainment value by 2013. Joining us now is Miley researcher Dr. Justin Canty from the Institute for Sustainable Cyrus Use. Doctor, you say this is the worst entertainment crisis humanity has ever faced?
Absolutely. Miley is a potent entertainment resource, but we are overusing her at unprecedented levels. She's on television, albums, toys, clothing.
Okay.
She has a sold-out live concert series. If we don't act now, the down-to-earth Miley, who likes text messaging with her friends and playing guitar in her bedroom, will be wiped off the earth forever.
You point to the examples of Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears, the Olsen twins.
Well, they were bountiful entertainment resources that our overconsumption reduced to smoldering remnants. But we are burning through Miley at a far more aggressive rate.
Then what is the timeline here?
Typically, a teenage star can have profits drilled from her for approximately 6 years before dropping down to is-she-too-wild levels. Miley was discovered only 3 years ago, and already there's pregnancy rumors, the photo scandal.
However, though, Disney says it has plans to pump songs and shows out of Miley for at least another 3 to 5 years before discarding what's left of her.
She won't last that long. Within 2 years, she'll be little more than a withered, desiccated husk, incapable of causing anyone any amusement at all. So,
great.
There's brilliance in that, Preston.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because there's so doggone much truth in it.
Yep.
You know, it's why so many of, you know, the younger generation of whippersnappers go to something like The Daily Show, and why I love The Daily Show so much, because by refusing to take these self-important stuffed shirts seriously, they're able to tell a little bit of truth that no network newscast would ever be able to tell.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And fortunately, even those network systems, those large media conglomerates, they're not monolithic, and people within them are doing some amazing work. That story and about there being a good chance that the White House has a vegetable garden. That was on Common Dreams, but they got it from CBS News. So there are those moments like that.
Yes.
That does bring the wrath of the right wing. You know, why do they hate CBS so much? And, you know, it does have these moments.
And I don't know if you're aware of it or not, Preston, but there is a study that hit today. I saw it mentioned over at Think Progress. And you can't just drive by this without study. Network news coverage favored Republicans from 1992 to 2004. And you know this. I'm sure David Horowitz will be out there having a fit or something. A study of campaign coverage released by Indiana University has found that ABC, CBS, and NBC favored Republicans in each of the presidential elections from 1992 through 2004. It was the first major research project analyzing the relatively unexplored territory of visual coverage in presidential elections and found that production decisions, and see, this is what makes this study important. It's not just some blathering idiot in front of a camera. You know, back to you, Stan. No, it says production decisions like editing techniques, camera angles, and shot lengths were more favorable to Republicans. In other words, you know, this is the part where we start talking about not just the in-your-face right-wing bias, but the subtle cues that go on underneath it. It's almost like the network news divisions suddenly picked up on the fact that you can play Beatles and Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin albums backwards and maybe Ozzy Osbourne or God only knows Judas Priest or whoever, and there's messages there. Oh, and they went, oh, wait, we could do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of subtle messaging going on. I remember when they were selling the Miley Cyrus tickets at the Pepsi Center. You know, it was like all these reporters apparently were told to say, you know, something about the incredible mad rush. And there was, but saying it also creates it, you know, it creates the hype. And back to the Onion real quick, I'm fortunate that they had their editorial office, at least part of them, part in Madison, another group in Boulder. And here in Denver, we have free copies laying around at kiosks. So I'm able to pick it up. And recent one, when Obama was, you know, giving his inauguration speech right around that time, made a photo of him and something like Obama inauguration speech interrupted by incessant jackhammering. And I thought that was
along those lines, I got an email from Sue, I think, yesterday, who was just hit by a flash of curiosity and perhaps a flash of brilliance. If I had some betting money, I'd lay down a little bit on this. She said, "Why do you want to bet that Republicans get up and walk out tonight on Obama's speech?" You know, because it's not a real State of the Union speech. So they're free, and of course they'll sit on their hands and they get all of that stuff. The other thing that's driving me nuts is the fact that, and by the way, his name is not Bobby. We need to start using his real name. Governor Piyush Jindal is delivering the Republican response to the speech tonight. Now, pardon me if I just wonder, if it's not a real State of the Union speech, why do they get to give a real response?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm hoping Obama doesn't say something about the need to, you know, something about Social Security.
Oh, mercy. I'll get the vapors if he does.
I heard a noise about that earlier today, something about addressing Social Security, something rather.
Well, it's driving me crazy because they've released some quotes of what Piyush Jindal will say. And he's going to say, and this is a quote, Preston, "Democratic leaders say their legislation will grow the economy. What it will do is grow the government, increase our taxes down the line, and saddle future generations with debt. Who among us would ask our children for a loan so we could spend money we do not have on things we do not need? That is precisely what the Democrats in Congress just did. It's irresponsible." If he says that, Preston, and you are much more tolerant than I am, and that's what makes our conversation such a joy. But if he says that, I do. I want pianos to fall out of the sky. I want lightning bolts to come down from Olympus and every high point ever worshipped by any native group on this planet and just have done with him. The nerve, but because he's going to say that, Preston.
Yeah. I want the newly christened nuclear submarine to be flashed up on the screen as he's saying this.
Or, you know, just maybe flash up pictures of little dead Iraqi children or a blown-up Afghan wedding party.
Yeah.
Or how about Pat Tillman's picture? That's nice and American.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the brass, the nerve, the brazenness of a statement like that just makes me want to scream loudly.
Yep. Real quickly on, I know you need to go here soon, but quickly on consumerism and how even within the media machine there are these points of creative thinking and even dissent. Have you seen WALL-E?
I have not seen it, but I plan to.
There's a lot of interesting stuff going on there.
Well, the right-wingers had a fit about that one, Preston.
Oh, did they? Oh, good.
Oh, yeah. My friends, it's just another attempt by people like Al Gore to make us think that the sky is falling and that humankind are somehow bad for the planet. Oh, yeah, I heard it. Yeah.
Okay.
You don't want to be. My dreams, Preston, are so icky. You know, sometimes I hear those voices in my head in my sleep, and I want a pill. But I intend to see WALL-E. I want to sit and watch it with my kids.
And it is challenging. It does repeat some of Al Gore's narratives and other environmentalist narratives about our habits and how we are destructive in some ways, and the trash problems and the kind of. Oh, just a lot of things go on in the film, and also questions consumerism. They have this spaceship mall that's kind of been blasted off into space while they have these robots trying to clean up Earth, and it's this impossible task. And the people, the American people, are just like, you know, they're kind of really, really heavy set, bobbing around on these floating chairs and hooked up to these cell phones, and it's confront people in these powerful ways. At the very end, though, it has this this hopeful story of resurgence and
yeah, don't ruin it for me.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah.
Hey, I gotta ask you, have you seen the Almost Level West Virginia video?
I have. That was great, and I think I even put it up on my Facebook wall or.
Well, I'm just yeah, I did see. I'm sorry, I did see where you put that up on Facebook. I haven't learned how to do that yet. I don't think.
I'm still learning my way through these.
Oh, I know. Me too. But up past 2,500 views, I'm just tickled to pieces, and I hope it gets around. Preston, wonderful conversation. I enjoyed talking with you. I've got one more blinker here, and we're going to try to hit that.
Great.
But take care and be well.
You too. Bye-bye.
Later. Calling from Denver, our good friend Preston. And I hope you're still here. No, you're not. Darn. Well, we'll try this. We'll try this next line here. Hi, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey.
Well, I just wanted to say a few things real quickly because I know you're running out of time, but I wanted to bring people's attention to the forums. I posted an article on a movie I've been talking about for a long, long time, Bob, called The Watchmen. And it's a great article from Wired. And if you guys want to know what it's about, Watchmen is one of the groundbreaking novels which painted a dystopia world of what happens when superheroes realize they're not so super.
Oh, I've seen reference to that. That looks really interesting.
This, you know, Bob, I say a lot of things about comic books, but Watchmen is like Alan Moore is the Kurt Vonnegut of graphic novels, and I don't say it lightly. He is.
When no, I find it difficult that anybody could be the Kurt Vonnegut of anything but Kurt Vonnegut, but I will take your word for it.
I mean, but the thing that makes him so amazing and so intuitive is because of the fact that he's it was like he could play out this scene he could play out the scene of a comic book, but he even though he was from England. He knew what was happening in America to a level, I guess, like in George Orwell. And what's amazing about the movie is it goes into, like it has a character. Here's an example of what Zack Snyder has done. This film has been in development, people, for over 20 years. It's a nightmare for a lot of people in the film studios. A lot of directors have had their hand on it, and they've been afraid of it because Alan Moore is notorious for coming out and saying, don't film my graphic novels. That's the kind of person he is. But Zack Snyder realized that if he didn't make this film, he would regret it for the rest of his life because he believes someone else up, and he believes he was destined to make it. And in the article, they talk about something called the Owl Ship, which is one of the superheroes named Night Owl, and they talk about the details that he put in it, and people are just, like, blown away by how far he's gone into the detail of the film. Like, there's one example of one of the revolutionary techniques they use is Dr. Manhattan, who's named after the Manhattan Project. And he's a scientist who had a nuclear explosion, and he became this metacosmic superhero who was like God, but really still questioning his identity. But what was cool about it was they talk about how they created him, and what they did was, they said, we wanted to bring out the illuminance of what was inside his body. So they used CGI, but they also used LED lights in a revolutionary way. So you see the lights. It's a combination, a hybrid of all the three. You have the CG, you have the actor, and then you have the LED lights placed in different places. So I just wanted to make a mention to that article if people are interested in it. And
you've already got a response. Katie in the chat room saying Watchmen is the best graphic novel ever.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the greats. And I encourage people to go post in the chat room. I've been posting steadily with Lucky Rooster and Thunderstone, and I would appreciate it if some other people would come in and do responses, because I plan on posting a hell of a lot more, and I have everything from physics to archaeology to marine biology.
Oh, cool, cool.
To history. I mean, Bob, I've gone the gamut of this, and I guess that's my vision of it.
Between you and, you know, I say it about Gene, but I need to include you as well. The two of you read the internet once a day.
Well, not really. What I do is, you know, we scan it. I don't want to say how much time I take on selecting these stories, but I'll say this. I don't watch the clock, people. That's what I'm talking about.
Nobody involved with this endeavor watches the clock. I don't think there's a clock among us, David.
I mean, if you watch the clock, you'll start to get bitter because it's such a slow process of building.
Well, I want you to know. I'm taking little baby steps here. I went out and I digged because I don't think you dug. I digged and I stumbled. The almost level video. He can be taught.
There's some other interesting stories, but I don't want to keep people. I hope you guys check it out. We also have the Bill Maher thread up there, which that's going to be where we collect all of the episodes for the season. We're going to keep that up to date.
Oh, that'll be fun.
So, I mean,
except
you know,
the Ann Coulter parts.
except the Ann Coulter part. I encourage people to get into it. I also have a story about there's a fish. You can see pictures of someone who I believe the Montreal Marine Institute has filmed a fish that has a transparent head, and it's pretty awesome to look at it. And it goes
love
into
that
detail.
Stuff.
I know, and that's the kind of stuff that I'm attempting to bring, and I help other people. It opens the door for them. But what I do is, it is a hard process because I try to select stuff that is interesting, and a lot of times it's a lot of stuff doesn't make the cut because it's not that interesting. But I just wanted to bring people's attention to that board, and I hope you guys get there, and I hope you guys respond and reply because, as I said, the momentum that people are building on this board, I want to keep building this foundation, and soon we'll have a house, and then soon on top of that house we'll have a community, and soon on top of that community we'll have a city, and so forth, that kind of thing. That's what I'm opening the door
and
for people.
And a foosball table and a dartboard, yes.
Yeah, and a foosball table. Bob, you know, it's 8:59, and I know you got to get out of here, so I just wanted to bring attention to people's to go look at the Watchmen article because I think you'll find it a little bit breathtaking in the details of this film and the controversy behind it and just everything there. It's a really well-written piece.
Cool. Thank you very much, David.
No problem, Bob.
Take care.
All right, later.
Bye now. And I lost a couple of phone calls along the way. I'm sorry. Stick with me here. You know, we have conversations here, but try back in tomorrow night. Prayer meeting tomorrow night, after all. Thank you to all of you for putting up with me this evening. I was a little harum-scarum getting started, so I apologize for that. But we had some fun conversations tonight, and I do appreciate that. Thanks to all of you for sharing your time, listening to the programming, and contributing your ideas, your thoughts, your hopes, your dreams via the chat room, via email, via your phone calls. Posting on the headonradionetwork.com forum, you know, get in there. That thing's for you. And when you got folks like Renee Louise Thunderstone and David and Lucky Rooster, who is David from South Carolina, putting that stuff in there, you're going to find some stuff well worth thinking about, talking about, engaging in conversation outside the broadcast times. So use it. It's there for you. Thank you, as I said before, to people, to those of you, and you know who you are, who have contributed to make February not nearly as bleak as it was shaping up to be. We sincerely appreciate you stepping forward. Mercy, but we do. Thank you to our good friends at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Their work is making the visions that we talk about on this program a lot more likely, a lot more viable, and a lot more possible. It's the heroism of the people struggling upstream for all of us downstream, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, that serves as my inspiration, and I hope as yours as well. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, to John Fox, our chief engineer, chief musician, web designer, man about town. Literally, man about town. He's probably out house hunting right now, if I know John. He's in the middle of the great move. Oh, I hate moving. Thanks to the most overworked man in liberal talk, the man who single-handedly saved liberal talk on the Internet, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. There's no horn without Ben Birch and the White Rose. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
All the news the government does not want you to know. Here's your now from Washington.
The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document which he has sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
We do have secret prisons. That is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. As many of you know, we had planned to have the legendary veteran journalist Helen Thomas on tonight. She has served and questioned every president since John F. Kennedy. She's, in fact, been a journalist since Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And she was coming here on the Inside Scoop to give her first, to my knowledge, in-depth one-hour interview on her life's work. She still will do that.